Blog Talk Radio.
Jesus is on the main line. Tell him what you want. Oh, I know that Jesus is on the main line. Tell him what you want. Oh, I know that Jesus is on the main line. Tell him what you want. You just call him up and tell him what you want. If you are sick and you can't get well, come on and tell him what you want. Oh, I know that if you are sick and you can't get well, come on and tell him what you want. Oh, I know that if you are sick and you can't get well, come on and tell him what you want. You just call him up and tell him what you want. For his line is ever busy. Come on and tell him what you want. Oh, I know that Jesus' line is ever busy. Come on and tell him what you want. Oh, I know that Jesus' line is ever busy. Come on and tell him what you want. You call him up and tell him what you want. For Jesus, Jesus, tell him what you want. Oh, Jesus, call him Jesus. Come on and tell him what you want. Oh, I said Jesus, Jesus, come on and tell him what you want. You call him up and tell him what you want. Amen, amen. Good morning, Leila Tov. I hope you're doing well today. Welcome to the Praise God, Let's Talk About It radio show. My name is Evangelist Michael Peavy from the Golgotha Church of Christ, and we're just excited one more again to be here today, that God saw fit on this day to allow us to have another day, another moment to shout and praise his name, another day to eulogize and give honor and praise to what he's done for us. Come on, somebody. Many times, if you just tell the truth, you wish you could get some time back, because you deserve to give that time back to Jesus. But in your folly state, in your silly state, in your young and dumb and having fun state, you allowed him to carry you through the time frame of life, and he did that like he did in the poem Footprint. And carried you till you finally got your ideas and your mindset together where you could stand on your own two feet, and now you can give praise back to him. You can bow down to him. You can worship him in spirit and in truth, because that is what the Father not only is, that is what he requires of his faithful servants. We are just so excited today, because today is a day of beginning. Today is a day of restoration. It's also a day of new compassions that God has given us every day. This is an opportunity for you to get your mind straight, for you to get your ideas organized, for you to get your life right about who God is, so that God can get you right and you can go right with him into heaven. Come on, somebody. I'm excited today, because this will be the first day that I will have the opportunity of interviewing my mother, putting her on the hot seat in regards to some decisions that we made, that were made And my life has been, the betterment has been a blessing. And as I get older, the more older I get, the more not only impressed, but the more humble I become based off the power of decision making. But, you know, as you know, we all had to be developed. We all had to start somewhere. And so I decided to use my story today. I wrote a book called From Blues to Good News. You can find it on Amazon. Go on to Amazon.com and type in From Blues to Good News. Type in my last name, Peavy, if it doesn't come up, P-E-A-V-Y. First name is Michael. You'll see a saxophone on the front and a cross. From Blues to Good News, and that is an autobiography of my life, almost, you know, close to 40-some years of my life from my trek from back home to here in Chicago. And my life didn't begin with me, but it began with a decision that was made by my mother. And so I'm so excited that God has saw fit that she is still alive today and that we can actually come together and talk about it, get a recorded fashion of it, but also be able to enjoy the blessings as God has for us as we go forward. So I thought I would, from the book, From Blues to Good News, hopefully maybe to pique your interest to kind of see what it's talking about. And then I'm going to turn it over to my mother to let her share her version, her visual decision-making and how things have transpired over the years from when I was a wee high to a duck from birth. To where I'm at, will be 58 in just a couple weeks to now. So 58 years, and it's really ironic because my guardian took me at age 58, and I'm going to be age 58, understanding the power of that decision. Let me start this way. Give me a drink of my hot tea here real quick. Ever had the impression that life was no more than a rat race? Do you ever feel like a caged hamster on an invisible treadmill wheel? You keep going round and round and around, continually seeing the same scenery day in and day out, time and time again, while nothing in life seems to ever change, and the results remain the same. And routine becomes redundancy. You ever experienced that? Routine? Life can become a routine, can it not? Literally a sequence of actions regularly followed, some kind of a fixed program or ritual that you find yourself doing day in and day out. You may hear words like customary or normal, somewhat standard or usual. That would describe routine. But when routine becomes redundant, where routine morphs into redundancy, we have to look at redundancy from another perspective. Because redundancy literally is a state of being no longer useful, the state of being no longer needful. But it's also repetitive, somewhat a backup system that we use to make it through. Redundancy can appear to be an excessive overuse, but however many times when it comes to God, God uses redundancy for emphasis sake. All of us are really going nowhere until we get somewhere today. Find a way to chase the blues of life away. When routine becomes redundant, life seems to remain the same. Well, have you ever seen a clown? We like to go to the circus. We like to see the clowns. We like to go to family outings or picnics and see the clowns, do face painting and balloons and everything. Such upbeat individuals to bring us such joy. But the question is, have you ever seen a clown down? Let me say that again. Have you ever seen a clown down? Have you ever really witnessed a clown cry? I'm not talking those fake window wiper hand gesture tears that entertain audiences during a show. But what I'm talking about, a real cry, real salty, heavy, burdened down, life-driven tears behind that smiling face is a frown from a human being. I'm talking about a real cry, my friend. A clown is always expected to be that upbeat on stage and in the very moment, always bringing joy and ludicrous laughter to an audience of one to even tens of thousands. Clown is one who habitually plays the role of a buffoon. A buffoon preacher, yes, a buffoon. A ridiculously amusing person. Their job is to keep you upbeat, even when things are not upbeat around you. So they get to play the role of the blockhead. They get to play the role even of an idiot. And be it day in or day or night, that is the task or the job prescription per se of a happy-go-lucky, spirited clown. We're all kinds of colors. Keep you laughing and joy. Keep you smiling and taking great pictures. But folks, I have come to understand that you don't always have to be a buffoon all of your life. Jesus Christ can help you with your buffoonery. Christ can convert your buffoonery into blessedness. What does blessedness look like then, preacher? So glad you asked that question. Blessedness from the standpoint of Jesus is a learned woman or a learned man. Someone that becomes more intellectual and gravitates to wisdom rather than foolishness. They look like a scholar, so to speak, or you've always heard it say, well, that's an old soul there. They've been here before. That's blessedness. When God has duct taped you together and given you some wisdom to share with somebody else. Doesn't matter what your education level is, you have something to share through experience with somebody else. Oh, yes, the mighty hand of the potter, power in his very pinky to transform a blemish into something beautiful. He has the power to take a brawler and make them a brother. He can change the heart of a barbarian and turn them into a beloved burden bearer. Oh, yes, he can. He can take what is awful in your life and what has been awful in my life and make it something awesome so others can benefit from it. I've seen it done. I believe it. I now surrender all of myself to the God of heaven because only Jesus the Christ, Son of God, illegitimate bastardized child, convert them and then give them a new birthright. So I come to you today if you need transformation. You need transformation in your life today. You need to look to Jesus Christ. Romans 12 says, do not be conformed to this world, but be you what? Transformed by the renewing of your mind. We got to work on our minds, that you will come with that perfect will of God, that acceptable will of God, which is your reasonable, logical service. Amen, somebody. I want a new birthright that comes by Christ. Folks, I realize that respect. I haven't always been who I am today. I realized that it was hard knock lessons and that I learned through living. They taught me both strength and potency. Yes, your experience will teach you to be stronger and to have more elasticity, but you never lose as long as you learn. Mama always reminded me that I needed to learn something from the mistakes and the bad decisions that I've made in my life. And if you do not learn anything from a mistake, folks, you are more likely to repeat it again and again and again in some fashion or form. I want you to know today, God has been waving his powerful hand in your direction. He's waved his powerful hand in my direction for quite a long time. He has been navigating me through the roller coasters of life, just wanting to get my attention. And it has not been all about me, as I supposedly thought it was back in the day. But rather, it's been all about God, even though I didn't see it that way. Jesus tells some folks in Matthew 5, blessed are they that do hunger and thirst after what? Righteousness sake, for they shall be filled. What you hungry for today? For God's word, you're hungry for a better relationship. You're hungry for closeness with the Lord. God says, I want to fill you up. Let me overflow your tank. Let me fill your belly. Amen. The privileged opportunity that God has given me to eagerly learn about him during this dash time of energy that he's given, he provided me. Life is but a vapor. Between every birth date, between every birth beginning and end date is a dash. And it's during this time of energy, this dash of life, that taught me a few key points that I will discuss here in more detail. First, I have learned that there is an enormous difference between being happy versus being blessed. Oh, yeah, there's a difference between being happy and being blessed. Happiness is no more than a Band-Aid on a boo-boo that is predicated by something. But blessedness, we live in a material microwave society today where everything must be fluid. Everything must come fast. I need it now. Yet physical materialism is immaterial to God. Let me say that one more time. Physical materialism is immaterial to God. Worldly prosperity does not measure up to blessedness. Having an audience that cheers for you is not always a good health for an individual. Just because you're smiling today, you have two chickens in every pot, that does not literally mean that you're in a blessed state with the God of heaven. Certainly, I can see that the Bible teaches us that God makes the sun to rise on the evil and on the good. And he sendeth the rain on the just and on the unjust. I recognize the fact that biology of the human body even informs us that it takes fewer muscles in my face to smile than it does to frown. we need to give our face a break sometimes. Smile. Yet many find themselves working hard at getting the world's bureaucratic endorsement rather than receive God's divine signature. We must please God, folks. Hebrews 11 and 6. For again, happiness is no more than a temporary band-aid. Blessedness only comes from God. Cannot receive it from anyone else. So the smile that truthfully makes the difference in life today is when God smiles on you and when God smiles on me. Has God been good to you? Oh, I know he has to me. Songwriter said, God has what? Smiled on me. He has set me free. He's been good to me. Boy, if you can say that, then you know that you serve a God that truly loves you. Secondly, I have learned about reality. Now, reality, Lily, is the state of things as they actually exist. Reality is what we call real life, true to life. It is what truth is, and truth is opposite of error. Things that are consistent and not randomly influenced by conformity or mass hysteria is what reality is. Hysteria, preacher, yeah, you know about hysteria. We've got some hysteria in this world. The media sells danger and sells, your newspaper, the first few settings is something that's happened. You turn the TV on, 10, 15 minutes, there's nothing but explosions and problems. And that brings up numbers, and that rises up the temperature level, gets emotions going. Hysteria is no more than exaggerated emotions, uncontrollable emotions. Sometimes it can even be categorized as excitement. But the thing about reality is not influenced by conformity nor mass hysteria. What I've learned about reality is that reality will literally sit down and visit with you. Reality will pull up a chair at your dinner table during some unexpected time or some unexpected moment in your life. So being mentally prepared to receive the message of reality is critically important. But some people can't handle the truth. Thirdly, I have learned that what is popular in today's world is something I call cover-up or the cover-up syndrome. The cover-up syndrome is a vehicle that drives the global world of cosmetic marketing. It's as lucrative as that business may be, people still strive at endorsing a false image of themselves. So not only am I false on the outside, I also predicate a falseness on the inside. We must remember that there is a skeleton in everyone's closet. Come on, somebody. An age and time cannot be purchased at your local convenience store. If it were not for God, those dry bones would be charged with indecent exposure. God wants us to bring our dry bones to him. Come clean. Get the skeleton out of your closet and bring it to God. Stop being a hidden entertainer, because hidden entertainers are not wind-up toys that have not been sprung, nor are they energizer bunnies that do not get tired. These energy sources do exhaust in power, but hidden entertainers need to be replaced when the options present itself with something authentic. And fourthly, I have learned down beneath the thick, callous layers of jovial, tough, flat, happy surface exterior can be a plethora of years full of open, bleeding wounds that need to be mollified. They need to be bound, and they need to be healed. Open, bleeding wounds that need to be mollified. Mollified, they need to be reduced. They need to be softened. They need to be dealt with. They need to be mitigated. Why? To reduce the severity of whatever is bothering you. Whatever has become kryptonite and is not allowing you to become strong and keeping you as a spiritual midget. Open bleeding wounds need to be mollified, bound, and healed. Real hurt and pain. For some of society's three O's, which are the orphans, the outcasts, and the outsiders, do you know anyone who might fit into the role of an orphan, an outcast, or an outsider? Could it possibly be that you or someone close to you might be an orphan, an outcast, or an outsider? Some voluntarily assume that position, and some allow themselves to be pushed into it, while others just feel like outside. So before I go to the fifth point, let's recap or recapitulate here for a moment. Number one, physical materialism is immaterial to God. Physical materialism is immaterial to God. Number two, reality will sit down and visit with you at some unexpected moment in your life. Cover-up is popular, but it endorses a false image so that people become hidden entertainers. And number four, many fall into the categories of orphans, outcasts, and outsiders. Some even carry years of weighted open bleeding wounds that need help and mitigation. And sometimes that mitigation or sometimes that help is really clinical, and clinical help may be required. Folks, how you see things predicates the result of how things come out. You ever heard the phrase garbage in, garbage out? You're going to produce what has been planted to harvest in your life. So a man thinketh, so is he. Another person's reality. Many have been falsely led in a direction of bewilderment with no acceptance at all. They believe that they just do not fit in anywhere. And these perceived feelings of external judgment have worn down these human butterflies and has caused them to re-cocoon. They're re-cocooning them back in time into becoming selfish introverts. Have you heard someone ever say, please just leave me alone? Don't bother me. Let me find refuge in myself. That is an open statement of protective envelopment. Envelopment? Yeah, like an envelope that protects what's inside of it. They are pulling up an outside barrier, encasing one's own feelings of safe security within themselves. And I want you to understand, folks, that most times the biggest loser is not the neighborhood. The biggest loser in the neighborhood is not the new kid on the block. The biggest loser in the neighborhood
is really not the one being judged based on grafted appearance and or experience. But more definitively, the biggest loser is the jealous, shrewd envy of a person who seeks to be happy by bringing someone else down. That is sad. That is really the loser. They find joy in bringing someone else down. But do not get discouraged when others want to steal your joy. There are those who want to wipe that grin off of your face. There are those who literally want to turn your smile upside down into a frown. Yet God can put that smile back on your face. God can polish you to shine, to a shine that illuminates like no one else can. Yes, he can. He can push the corners of your life in an upward direction. Does God care? That's what the world wants to know. And the answer is yes, yes, and yes again. Certainly God cares. Most definitively God cares. God cares about the three O's that cliquish society pushes away. God cares about the orphans. God cares about the outcasts. And God cares about the outsiders. And fifthly, I have learned that pitiable wretchedness has always enjoyed misery. Pitiable wretchedness has always enjoyed misery. Now, you know how it's been said, consequently, that misery loves to entertain company. There are days when you just feel heavily burdened down, feel like having a pity party, gaining sympathy from those around you has become a routine in your life. Physiological illness drives your body. Perhaps the Grim Reaper has gathered another loved one that you had not yet been prepared to let go so soon. Death brings us down. Death can be a Grim Reaper. Perhaps you were eating caviar with your favorite beverage on the mountaintop, only to find out that you're now feasting on unleavened bread and water down in the valley. Perhaps one day you reported to work only to find out company is laying you off due to famine resources of recession that has it has experienced within itself. Perhaps today you are filled with a state of anxiety that you know you cannot shake loose from by yourself. Perhaps a state of depression has you feeling abnormal. Could be any number of things that would have you down. Depression is serious business. You feel like someone has a foot on the middle of your neck, and you can't breathe. Filling up the voids of life is God's nature. That's what he thrives in. God is consistent in his provision. Removing a burden load that's too heavy for you to carry or to bear is God's promise, because abnormality is God's specialty. I want you to know that there is a cure for your blues today. Some days situations just do not appear to be fair. Some days circumstances begin to spiral out of control sporadically in a direction that you had not initially planned for yourself. Some days the outcome seems to never be pleasant. Instead of doing again what you would have done in the past, come on somebody, this time repentance is in line. You must change your mind. If you change your mind, you can change your resulting outcome. this time. Surrender yourself totally over to excellent obedience conformity. Surrender your life to Jesus the Christ. Yoke up your life to what God has surrendered for all human beings to do and to follow. Jesus says in Matthew 11:28-30, come unto me all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon me and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest for your soul, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. A yoke was used in the agricultural world to connect the stronger animal with a weaker animal to collectively do the work at hand. It was a training device. The stronger animal would carry the burden of the load and then train up the weaker animal to be able to do that and be strengthened accordingly. Jesus says to yoke up with him, and he will help carry the weight of your load. He will help us to become more. So today, make a decision, folks, to stop shaking your bony fist to rebellion in God's heavenly divine faith. Stop climbing into a mental boxing ring looking for the knockout, because you're going to be the one knocked out. Our arms are far too short to box with God. Stop wasting your abilities on worldly activities that produce profuse living. Use your talents and your gifts for the rich purpose of God who gave them to you. For he loaned them to you. And a loan should always be paid back with interest. I told you I'm excited today. I'm excited today about where we're going. Because the road to success begins and ends with Christ Jesus. He is the first and the last. His grace is everlasting. His mercy is forever forgiven. His long-suffering is unfathomable. His love is motivationally emotional. His protection is unthinkably astounding. And he is the author and the finisher of where faith begins and where faith ends. Being thought of by the Godhead before the foundation of the earth, my journey began back as a husky little husk boy born and raised on the south side of Des Moines, Iowa. I grew up in the bottoms on the other side of the track. I bought food from Cohen's Grocery and walked to the water trough and back. I went to roadside when I was just a little boy. Had some change in my pocket, candy store. I saw candy everywhere, yellow, blue, green, purple, and brown. Yet I still got sick from all that candy that I had found. Oh, but we had a coal-burning stove to keep our old house warm. And had to wrap in wool blankets just to keep our bodies warm. Yes, I grew up in the bottom on the other side of the track. I grew up in the bottoms on the other side of the track. And I bought food at Cohen's Grocery Store, then walked to the water trough and back. Growing up in the area of a city well-known and widely known as the Bottoms, I'm telling you, from a child's perspective, life was pretty good. There were no fancy lights then. I don't ever remember having any limousine service come to our door. There was no lap of luxury there. But instead, I recall always having plenty of food to eat, plenty of juice and water to drink, plenty of family time, plenty of grassy yards for me and my friends to play around in. There were various parks schoolhouse, playgrounds, baseball fields, basketball courts, YMCA, YWCA, boys club, girls club, sports events, fishing, and so much more, I always had a bicycle to ride, but even walking never seemed too much like a chore. I was the shooting checkers champion at Roadside Community Center. I was kept quiet. I was kept quite busy as a child. And guess what? I loved it. Didn't know any better. It was fun to stay busy. It was fun to be me. Even as I grew older, when the streetlights came on, I better be in that front porch somewhere or be in that front yard somewhere. At least the mama could see you as you was in the yard. Otherwise, you'd remember and be a little warm on the back end. My childhood was wonderful. We went to church every Sunday at Mount Olive Missionary Baptist Church. I even remember my Sunday school teacher's name was Mrs. Miller. She spent much time teaching us about Jesus at a young age, helped to develop the young children. So life was good. It was that thick love that God provided for me through my family, stained us together. We are a close-knit family. Occasionally, we may bicker amongst ourselves, as you probably do with your own. Ain't no fight like a family fight. Come on, somebody. But it was not wise for nobody from the outside to try to bust in. It was all I knew as a child growing up. God had a plan for me from birth. And my mother, who's now Suzanne Holmes, with Suzanne PV, Suzanne Omega Holmes, and my late great guardian, Carmel Owsley, whom I also called Mama, have been both special in molding me into who I am today. And like I stated earlier, as I get older, day by day, I learn to appreciate the plan God had and the vessels that he used for me. Having raised three children of her own, one was lost, so she had four total. A loving woman close to the age of retirement did not need to have or to raise a 10-day-old newborn baby boy. Yet she would raise me as her own. And much credit is given today to many individuals that have contributed significantly in my life. God has blessed me with relatives, preachers, acquaintances, friends, mentors, teachers. Has given me a wonderful wife. And some strangers have taught me a few things themselves. Even the disciplined order of nature gets my attention nowadays. But yet when I pause for a moment and I reflect back to where it all started for me, there was two key individuals that had a very important part in my life. This was God's special plan for my life. God has always designed me with purpose. And I want you to know he's designed you with purpose too. You need to find out what that purpose is and walk in that purpose. God has a special plan for your life too. And to this day, I thank God for his piercing foresight. To this very day, I thank God for his perfect providence. And it is my hope that my story, with a unique opportunity to hear it through the eyes of my very own mother, is a blessing to you. I want to present to some and introduce to others my mother. My mom. My strength. Mom, you on there?
I'm here, baby.
All right, the floor is yours.
All right, well, we thank God for this morning, and this very wonderful occasion to really talk about my son. Michael was is a very special child and was something from the beginning. How far do you want me to go back, Mike? All the way back?
Go back to birth. You can go back as far as you want. This is your time.
Okay. All right. And so I was a young 15-year-old young lady, didn't know what I was doing, didn't know my name from a hole in the wall, really. But I was carrying this beautiful child. And because I was raised by my grandparents, who were Reverend and Mrs. Oscar M. Peavy, and they were very prominent in Des Moines, it was a big, you know, a shame at that time to come up as an unwed mother. You know, that was just, that was awful. And so they didn't want to just send me off somewhere where they didn't know where I was, so they put me in Booth Home for Unwed Mothers out on Indianola Road. It's still out there. And I spent, most of the 9 months there. Finished, did a lot of schoolwork and things there. And there was one person there that kept me encouraged all the time, and that was Mrs. Roman. Now, Miss Roman's husband was a pastor of Mount Olive Baptist Church before Reverend H.I. Fields, and so all the time that I was carrying you, Michael, she kept me encouraged because you know I'm kind of a fast paced individual, and the thought that I couldn't go wherever I wanted to go when I got ready did not really appeal to me, you know. But she would tell me, "Oh, baby, you be obedient." And so it came time, the time, of course, went by, and it came time for you to be born. And I told her, I said, "I'm not giving my baby to these nurses." This was a Catholic establishment. I'm sure it probably still is. And the nuns ran the program. They were very nice to me, but I had made up my mind that I was not going to give my baby to these nuns. And my grandfather had said, "Well, you have to do something because you can't bring him back. You can come home, but not with him. He cannot come across the threshold. This is not God's will, best for you," and whatever. So I had determined, I don't know what I was going to do, but I was not leaving my baby at the Booth Unwed Mother's Home. I wasn't doing that. And it was unheard of for you to go. It was hooked up with Mercy Hospital. And they took you to Mercy Hospital and put me in a room by myself in the dark. They gave me an epidural, and anybody knows me knows the needles terrify me. And the thing did not work. After sitting there for all that time and putting this needle in my back, who'd been numbing me from the waist down, it did not work. And so for about, 10 to 15 hours, maybe more, I labored in this room by myself in severe pain. Didn't know if I was going to make it out of there or not. And they didn't even come in and check my pressure to nobody. I didn't have any real attention to me. Because what they did was almost like an assembly line. You come, had the baby, leave the baby, you go. And mine was not going that way. So they put me in that room by myself, and there I was laboring. And they thought that I was dead from the waist down, but I was not. And so it was a terrible, terrible thing. But finally, you were born. And when you were born, I had to push a button to let them know that you were here so they could come and do all the things you do with the baby, cut the umbilical cord, clean the baby up, and all of that. And I told the nurse that came in and the doctor, I said, "I'm not leaving my baby here." And I remember them looking at me very funny. "And you have to know I'm not leaving my baby here." And so they devised a method that they thought was going to fool me because, you stay a couple of days, and I was with the baby, you know, there with you for a couple of days. And then here came somebody in with a clipboard. I guess she was a social worker now that I'm grown. I guess I don't know who she was. She wasn't a nurse. But she came with this clipboard, and on this clipboard was a whole lot of papers and a pen. And she said, "Here, you got to sign this so you can sign yourself out of the hospital." And, you know, I've always been highly intelligent. I have a high IQ, 175. So you just don't tell me anything, and I believe it, you know. And so I thought to myself, I am 15 years old. Kids don't sign themselves out of the hospital. I don't care what you're in here for. You have to have an adult. So I would not sign the paperwork. And I said, "Okay, thank you." And I smiled sweetly. And when she left, I said, "I need to read it before." So she left the room. And I went to looking down through there and reading those papers. And down under about the third or fourth paper, there were adoption papers. And they told me I had to sign every paper. And I guess there might have been five or six pieces of paper on this clipboard and this pen. And so I just, you know, I went and thought, this is fishy. It's kind of fishy. And I told her, well, I don't just sign stuff without reading it. So she kind of left, you know. She didn't like that I didn't sign, but she said, I'll be back. I said, all right, you come back. And I'll be ready by then. And when I, about that third or fourth, if I remember correctly, page down, these were adoption papers. You know, now, only reading I knew could have said at the top, adoption. You know, I'm not crazy. I know what adoption means, you know. And then you had stuff you had to fill out. And I guess they were going to fill it in. They just wanted my signature, you know. And so when she came back, I had you out of the bassinet playing with you in the bed. And she said, did you sign? You threw the paper? Yes, ma'am, I'm through. Yes, ma'am. And so she, you know, I had it laying there at the bed. And the pen was on top of the paper, just a neat. And she said, you didn't sign it. I said, I'm not going to sign them. I'm not leaving my baby here. Looked her straight in her face. She didn't know what to do with me. You know, and even though I was just a girl, I've always been big for my age, so I don't know if she thought maybe I better get out of here for this girl to hit me or what, but I looked at her like, you best leave me alone, lady. So out she went, and here they come pretty soon, the doctors and the nurses and all these people. I said, I'm not signing nothing. So they called Papa. Papa come, here he come. Now, baby, nope, I'm not signing it, Papa. No. So it's time, you know, I've been there, time to leave. And so I'm the only person that Miss Roman said she'd ever seen came out of Mercy Hospital from this establishment and came back in with a baby in a carrier. Because I had me and I had you in this little carrier, and back I came because I would not give them, wouldn't do it. And so finally, you know, they said, well, you can't stay here with that baby like that. Okay, what are you going to do? I don't know, but you ain't taking my baby. And I was adamant that I was not giving my baby to these nuns. And Miss Roman, I never forget, I was crying. Miss Roman, she said, well, you better do something right fast because they'll call DHS and take the child from you and say that you're unfit. And she said, I'll tell you what, go downstairs. This was back in the day when you had the pay phone. You sat down inside and put a dime in the thing and call. She said, go call Carmel and T. And, of course, she knew them because our family was staunch members of Mount Olive Baptist Church for years back. And she told me, right. You go call Carmel. Yeah, so that's why she knew them very well. And she said, you go back and call Carmel and T. And I thought, Carmel's going to be mad. Tig going to get you. I don't care what it is now. You're just going to have to take the tongue lashing because you're going to go call them. Otherwise, they're going to call the authorities and take your baby away. Well, when they said, take my baby away, that's all I needed to know. And I didn't have no money. And she gave me some change. And she said, get down there at that payphone. You know that number? I said, yes, ma'am. Go down there and call. And I dialed my grandmother Tig's number because Tig and Carmel stayed together. And so I called Tig's house and I don't know if Carmel answered the phone or who answered the phone. Anyway, well, I got to talking to Carmel, and I'm crying, telling her, they're going to take my baby. And I'm just smiling and crying. Yeah, I'm a kid, you know. I don't want them to take my baby. I'm not going to give them my baby. And I was always defiant. So, you know, she thought, oh, Lord, here we go with this gal, you know. And she said, where are you? And I told her, I'm downstairs. And I said, Miss Roman told me to call y'all. And I'll never forget, I heard my grandmother say, tell that fast tail gal to get a cab and come on here with that baby. And I said, oh, Lord, come. And so you heard Tig, get a cab. I said, I ain't got no money. Get a cab and give him this address. Because I was born in 708 Southeast 8th, and that's where they lived. So I knew where the house was. I was born in the house. So she said, you call them, and when they get here, I will pay them. Guess what Carmel said? Tell the cab driver I will pay them. And I don't remember if I called the cab or if she called the cab. I don't remember. I think, though, that she called me a cab because I think the little money Miss Roman gave me, I used in the pace. Because if you talk so long, then you're dying right now. She had to put another dime in to keep talking. And I think I had run my money out. But anyway, somebody called a cab. I remember that. And so I went upstairs and got my little bag. You know, you had your little bag with your clothes in it. And here I am with this little bag and you. And Miss Roman told me, go outside and stand between this. It was like a school. You had a big doors to come in, and you had to come in some more doors to come inside. She told me, go stand between them two doors and watch for the cab. Because I went back downstairs. She was in the kitchen. Kissed her goodbye. Said, thank you, Ms. Rome. She said, oh, that's wonderful. Get your bag and get out of here, gal. For they called the authority to take that baby. And so I went up, and I stood between the two doors. And then I saw the nuns coming. Because there was glass, you know, you could see. And so I went and stood outside on the sidewalk. So when the cab came, I could jump in the cab. And sure enough, by the time I got to the sidewalk, they was coming out the door to get me, but the cab came. And I put my baby, I almost threw you in the cab. I was wondering you didn't fall out of the carrier. Because I tossed you in the cab, threw this baggage and jumped in, and off the cab went, zoom. You know, we running, baby. We running. I'm telling you, I'm getting you away from these people. I don't know these people. They're not taking my baby. You know. And so then we get to the house, and I do remember Miss Roman called Carmel while I was there, and she said, yes, she's here. And I guess they talk later. I don't know. But anyway, I got there, and Carmel met me. She was outside almost standing at the door. If you remember Tig's door, you could look out, and Tig didn't have no grass. It was all dirt. So she could look out there. She was in the cab came. And Carmel was standing at Tig's door. And she wasn't outside, but she was inside at that door. She stepped down, come on out, paid the cab man, and then she got you out of the cab. Because I guess, you know, by this time I'm crying and hollering and fussing. And she said, girl, be quiet. You hear it. Now, hush, hush. And I had my suitcase. She had you in the carrier, and in we came. Set you on that big kitchen, that big dining room table when you first come in. And Tigger walked back then. She come in and looked at him and said, yeah, that's his baby. That's your baby. And I said, I don't know what I'm doing. Carmel said, well, what you going to do? I don't know, but I don't want them to keep my baby. I don't want it. She said, well, I'll call you. Call Reverend Miss Peavy. I said, no. He said that I can come home, but I couldn't bring the baby home. And, of course, that was a big discussion for years. Like, what kind of mess was that? You know, that was, oh, my God, that was a fight. Talking about Family Feud, that was a fight for years. But anyway, then she called Mom. She called my mother. And Mother said, no, we going to California. And she got herself in this mess. And, oh, no, no. Tig said, look, you're going to be right here with us until they come back from California. They was going to Disney World. I think it's Disneyland. Disneyland, Delta's was going out there for the Delta convention. And she, Lois and Phyllis went, Sonny and Tony and Snoop went, and I'm the only one. Yeah. I was left at home. They told me, there's your Disneyland sitting on the table, talking about you.
Whatever.
So they all left me. Mm-hmm. They all left me for 10 days, and I stayed that first 10 days with you. You were 10 days old. And then for the next 10 days, they were gone for 2 weeks. For the next 10 days, I stayed with Carmel and Tig at Tig's house. And, watch Karma shit. Now, this is where you change your diaper. This is where you do this, and this is where you do that, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, teach me how to take care of the baby. And then when Mom and them come back, Tig said to me, now, you take yourself on back over to the west side because you don't know what to do with this baby. You can't be on the street with this baby. Leave this baby here with Karma, and you go on about your business. And so Karma and I, in that 10 days since they left, we had made a pact, kind of like, you know, we kind of started on the phone when I was calling from the place, but we really got to talk. And the agreement was that I would leave you there, she would raise you, and I would not interfere, but she would always make sure that you knew I was your mother and that she would not change your name. If she didn't do those two things, I would never come and take you away no matter what. Because, you know, you fall after you have a baby for a while, I don't care if it's your natural or whatever, you fall in love with this child. And she'd had that experience. You know, she did have that experience when we were, you know, Debbie come and took him. I told her, no, I'll never do that to you, Carmel. I won't come and take him. I won't come and do that. And she, and you know, and I signed you up for public assistance, and she got the check. And I went on to the west side and lived with Mama and Papa and went on to school. Because, I mean, you know, and that was the best thing that I could have ever done. Now, people had all kind of comment about it. You left your baby. You blah, blah, blah. But what would I have done, 15-year-old girl with no education and a newborn baby, but live on the street? What would I have done? The best thing for me to do was that the adults would come in and take up charge of you, and I go finish becoming who I needed to be, because I couldn't have been your mom at 15. I didn't know my name from a hole in the wall, hardly. I didn't know. You know, just think where you'd have been if I decided I was going to take you and we went out and lived under a bridge somewhere. What kind of mess was that? And that does happen. But the Lord blessed me. I didn't have to do that. I had Carmel and I had Tig. And down through the years, Carmel raised you, and you did basketball and football, whatever else you were doing, and blew that horn and whatever. And she was 58 when this happened. So, you know, she's working at the packing house about ready to retire. All she needs is a 10-day-old baby. You 58 years old, you know. And like you said, you got 58 now. You can imagine all of a sudden somebody show up and say, here, I got a 10-day-old baby. But she did. Her and Carmel decided. Yeah, she didn't need that. But she was, in our family, the rule is you don't just throw a baby away and you don't give the baby to the system. Somebody takes charge of that child. And so I went on to the west side and I went on back to school, went on back, you know, Tech High School and did all that stuff, whatever. But the one thing I really thank Carmel for is when, as she got older, going up to the schools of these, because you was always in some kind of play, you playing the king and I or king and somebody and all this stuff. You know, and she was tired. You know, Karma was older, you know. And so she called me. Listen, they're having a play up there at that school. I don't feel like going up there. Can you go up there and go that play. Don't let him be up there by himself or he's doing something in the classroom. Go up there, da-da-da-da-da. And I go to the school and sit there and they say, well, who are you? I'm Michael's mother. Oh, were you taking him home? No. Well, why not? And everybody had big comment at the school, you know, why you don't take the Karma's are too old now and you ought to do this, you ought to do that. But I had promised her that as long as she made sure I knew you were her, that you knew I was her mother and she didn't try to change your name from Peavy, that I would never take you away from her. Never. And I was not going to do that. You know, and so as I got older and grew up and, you know, got married, I married Sonny and the only fight saying I ever had was you. You were the only fight. Because I go to Chicago with Tyrone and Darnell, and you did. He knew you were coming. He figured you were coming, you know. And you didn't show up. And he couldn't understand why I would not take you, take my responsibility and take you. But I promised Carmel that I wouldn't. And I never broke my promise. The only time that she and I had any really words about this as far as me deciding I'm going to come and get you, by this time I'm grown. I could have walked in the house, walked out the door with you if I wanted to. You know, you've been gone kicking and screaming, but that didn't have nothing to do with that. You know, people grab kids. I would not have been kidnapping because I had custody of you. Carmel never had custody of you. I had custody of you. But one time she was talking about changing your name to Owsley. She going to adopt you. That's what it was. Adopt you and change your name to Owsley because she was raising you. I understand how she felt, but I'm like, nope. Nope. And so, you know, we was mad at each other. We was at odds about that. And I told her, I said, and by this time I'm a grown woman. I ain't no little 15-year-old girl. Now I'm grown. I'm probably 20, 25, something like that. And I remember standing, and I never stood up to her and ting, never, because you don't do that in our family. You don't disrespect the elders. But I remember standing up, getting up out of my chair. You know, that was like getting your face slapped. You jump up out of a chair and I'm grown. You know? Because she kept telling me why she wanted. Yeah, you know, you can get the teeth knocked down in the Peavy family, you know, but Peavy Thomas family. But I kept saying, no, Carmel, I don't want his name changed. No. And she said, well, I'm raising him, and, you know, he's as my own. And all the things that she said was valid, Michael. But I was determined that wasn't going to happen. You was not going to be an Owsley. You were not. And so I remember standing up and saying, in Tig's house and saying, well, I'll just take him out of here now. And I remember Tig came out of the bedroom and said, you must want me to knock your teeth out your head. I'll never forget. I said, no, we made agreement. And I'm crying by this time. Karma, we made agreement. And she said, yeah, we made an agreement. And I said, all I'm asking you to do, I'm not trying to interfere. I ain't never told you where to send him, what to do, nothing. All I ask you is make sure I know I'm his mother and don't change his name. That's the only thing. And now you trying to change that. And she said, yeah, we agreed to that. And so I remember Tig saying, well, if you agree, tell him Karma. And, you know, they fought like cats and dogs, too. Them two sisters or something else. But I remember Tig, yeah, you know, they were real sisters. They were sisters for real. But I remember Tig told Karma, if that was the agreement you made with that girl from way back then, you can't change it now. And she said, well, I just kind of wanted, I said, Karma, I understand you love him, and I'm never going to come between that. But I don't want his name changed. So that ended that conversation. And that was the only argument we ever had about you. You know, because if I wanted to come to a game, I came. I was there. Sometimes you didn't even know I was there. If I didn't come, if I didn't want to come, I didn't have to come because the agreement was she would raise you as her own. You know, and so when I go, a lot of times when I came to the things you had at school, you knew I was there. But I've been to ball games you was in and you didn't see me. You know. Because I just came because I wanted to stay, and I didn't stay the whole game because I ain't no football, basketball person. But I just wanted to see you dribble the ball or whatever you were doing, you know. When I saw that, I went home. You know, I just went, because I'm a kid, you know, I ain't that grown my own self, you know. And so anyway, here we come up to to, you know, how karma passed in 1985. And the agreement that we both knew would happen, and she voiced this, and this is the thing that makes me almost cry when I think about it, because she said, I'm going to be his mama until I leave here, and then you're going to be his mama after that. And I said, yes, ma'am. And I always, no matter what, and I didn't agree with everything she did, because, I mean, you know, I don't know. I'm looking at it from a young person's perspective, but she had raised children. She knew what it would do to keep you out of trouble, you know. And but I would say something to her, why he doing that? And she said, because that's what I want him to do. That was her answer. And I said, okay. Yeah, that was your answer. In other words, that's my business. That's where I want him to go, and, you know, and he's going to do this. That's what he's going to do. Because when you got the horn, I thought, now what in the world is this boy going to do with this horn? You know, we know who else is. We didn't have nobody play music. And we weren't musically inclined family, you know. And she had went and got this horn, was paying these payments on this horn and all. And, you know, but you know, I said, well, ain't none of my business. She didn't ask me to pay for the horn, so I shut my mouth. And thank God that horn took you all over the world, you know, all over the world. So I didn't always know what was right. You know, that's why God put her in your life, because she would be a mature enough woman to raise you and know how to raise you where I wouldn't have had no clue, you know, what to do with you. I didn't know what to do with myself, let alone you, you know. And so it's been a wonderful journey, and so now here we are all these many years later. And she had passed in 85, and that was really hard on you, really, really hard on you. But once you were able to kind of get yourself together, we kind of started talking a little more on a more mother-son level, because I kind of almost felt like we acted like brother-sister for a long time. You know, because I was kind of raised halfway like Lois and Phyllis, the sister. We was kind of raised like that, you know, all together. Yeah. And like I was, you know, you were another kid in the family. I was another kid in the family. That's where it was until karma passed. And then that thing went to changing. And it wasn't overnight. You know, it wasn't overnight, but it went to changing. Of course, you had moved to Chicago at that time. And I don't know. God just kind of welded us together. And we did not agree on everything, you know, because you had your religious beliefs and I had mine. And we would go at each other like cats and like bulls in a china cabinet, trying to prove each other who was right and who was wrong, you know, over foolishness. But God cemented us together. And so now and years ago, I had said, I wanted us to, because at that time I had the church and I was had just formed the Armed and Dangerous thing. And I wanted us to minister together. And of course, in your denomination, in mine either, they didn't believe in women. I just did what the Lord told me to do. They didn't believe in me, but I didn't make me. What difference did that ever make me, you know? So, you know, I don't care about that. I'm doing what the Lord said. I don't care what y'all say. And, you know, that was the crystal part of me. You know, my mother was like that. And so you said, well, I think we can do this, Mom, but we got to do it this way. Nope, we ain't doing that. Nope. Nope, and we argued and fussed and hung up the phone and acted a fool for years. Then when I finally opened up Armed and Dangerous, I called you and said, look, I want you to do my morning prayer, because you were doing morning prayer anyway for Golgotha. And so we did that for you. And then I went to selling jewelry, and I said, listen, let's try to do this as a family, try to raise some money for ministry. And we both did that for a while. And I think we begin to see where we could work together. Everything we was fighting about, you know, because I'm like this, as long as you can get to heaven with what you believe, I'm okay. Just don't come at me with no doctrine to take you away from Jesus, because we're going to have a problem. But if you're doing what you're doing that can get you to heaven, then I'm gonna succumb to that. And so now here we are today, and here you are passing Golgotha, and here we are working mightily together. God just knows what he's doing. He cemented that thing. If we look at this thing from a perspective, spiritual perspective, God was ordering every step. That was God telling me don't leave that baby with them people. I didn't know it was God at that time. You know, I just thought I didn't want to leave my baby, you know. But it was not a rational decision for a 15-year-old girl to say, I'm going to keep this baby. But something was pushing me. And, of course, I didn't know anything about the Spirit of God. Well, I knew about the Spirit of God because I was in church, but I really didn't have a relationship with the Lord like that, like I have now. And so I didn't know that was God pushing me. But he had a plan for your life and for mine. And if I had not listened to that little inner voice, and because of that experience I had with you, I learned when God is talking to me and when he's not. People say, oh, God ain't talking to you. Well, that's, if you feel that way, that's your business. But I know when the Spirit of God is prompting me to do something, because I know as I got older, I knew that's what was going on. I didn't know it at the time. And so then I've learned to listen to that little voice, that inner voice that tells me do this or don't do that. And it has led me all the way up to now. I'm 72 years old, and God has allowed me to do miraculous things in my life. And you're soon to be 58, and God has allowed you to do miraculous things in your life, all because he guided a 15-year-old girl that didn't even know her name hardly from that day to this. And so that's your birth story, and it's an interesting one, and one that most people would not know what to do with, because I have people tell me, oh, you didn't bring that baby home from Booth. Well, if you call out there, they'll let you know I did, because I was there. I'm on the records, and they didn't get no baby to adopt out because I took you away, you know. So according to Miss Roman, I'm the only, until she worked there for years, till she died. And she told me I was the only person she ever known, and only girls that she ever known in there that ever came back from Mercy Hospital with a baby. So, but God was prompting me, because he had more for you than to be stuck somewhere with a family that didn't know your potential. You needed to be in this family for this reason, to have things happen as they did so that God could do what he wanted to do with you. And I just thank God for him being the vessel that brought you here, because it's a wonderful thing to watch you now and see. You can't imagine the joy I felt. I'm going to DMAC, and I was president of the African American Student Alliance, and I was president of Phi Beta Kappa, which was a business organization. And so I wanted that year, as president of both those groups, I wanted a trip to Disney World in California and Disneyland. So I'm on the trip going to Disney World, and of course I'm older than these kids, and they all bunkered in together, whatever. I can't take all that noise, so I paid for my own suite so I could have some privacy with these kids. And I didn't know if I couldn't do all that. You know, they were kids, they were young. You know, I'm older, and so I go in my room and close the door. We had, you know, fellowship together and whatever. They ate together. Then I went in my room, and then I went to screaming, and them, come down, come here, because there you were with your band. On what they had, Channel 13, I don't know if that's not our Channel 13 here, but there you were with your band, Michael Peavy and his band, whatever the name of your band was, there y'all were on television. What was the name of the band?
Intensity.
What'd you call it?
Intensity
your
One.
Okay, well, see, I didn't know what it was. I just knew all I saw you, you know, that's all I knew.
Right.
And I had all the kids coming in there. They said, that can't be. And then when they looked at you on television, they said, no, that's her son, because he looked just like her, you know.
Yeah, right.
and it was a pride. It was a pride thing, you know. Now, I didn't know where you was at when you made this thing, or when are you on the news or whatever it was, but I saw you, and I'm all the way out in California going to on a Disney World trip because I had, you know, was president of those two groups when I was at DMAC, Urban Campus. So it's been a prideful thing, and a pride for me as a mother to watch you grow and develop, and to know that the decision that I made at 15 was not the wrong one, but was the right one, and contributed to whatever it is you're doing now to glorify God. That's your story, baby.
Yeah, that group was called Intensity One. Ted Brewer was we was all at Roosevelt University. Well, Ted and I was at Roosevelt University, and the drummer, Ben, was playing with us at that time out of Indiana. And then we had Charles Craig, who was from a conservatory that was studying under Willie Pickens. He was in, that was our group for years. And we were playing. Harold Washington was a alma mater of Roosevelt University. And when he passed away, they didn't know who to choose. And Eddie Baker, who was used to play with Max Roach, said, we're going to pick Michael Peavy and his group to perform. And so we played in front of the school for the program. And that's all we thought it was.
That's exactly what
every major channel across the United States, because it was Harold Washington, the first black mayor of Chicago. And so we got national purpose. Yeah. And
well, I saw, I'm out in California. Maybe you were.
Yeah, so you was in California.
And went to screaming, hollering and screaming. I done told the kids to get out of my room because I'm tired. And then they hear me out in the hallway hollering and screaming, y'all, come on, come on. And they like, oh, God, I almost thought I was having a heart attack or something. I don't know what that, because I'm old, way older than them, you know. And they come running thinking something was physically wrong with me. And I'm screaming, that's my boy on television. And there you were.
Yeah, that was something. That was something. I remember even Bunky Green's wife, who I was studying with Bunky's, they was watching TV and they saw it. And she called, same scenario you said. She called him and said, ain't that your student? Yeah, that's Mike. So, of course, when I went to my next lesson, about another 2 days or so, he was like, okay, celebrity. I saw you. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Can I have your autograph?
Made me feel good. Made me feel good to get an attaboy from him. Yeah, you, and you sounded good. I was very proud. Boy, that's all I needed to hear.
Oh, yeah, the band was kicking. Y'all was topped up. Top notch, and you know, and I had it. So all the kids that I had ran out of my room because I didn't want to hear their noise. They was all crowded in there, including the teacher, and watching you. And of course, that gave me a lot of kudos with them. After that, I was the cool one, and before I was the old lady in the class. And after that, I was the cool one because my son had a band, you know.
Oh, it's amazing, and it's interesting how I got to Chicago because, like you say, in '85 when Mama passed away, you know. That was the first time in my life I didn't know what I was doing. I couldn't keep a job. Mm-hmm. I was crying uncontrollably. I couldn't stay in the house, so I stayed with Phyllis down, you know, in her house. And Lord, mm-hmm. just kind of duct taped me together to keep it going. And it was Butch that just said, okay. And about a month later, he came over and he said, boy, we have to talk. And he always looked up to my older brother and et cetera. And he was just like, he had never had to put that foot down because I was always directional. I always knew what we were doing. You know, we were very, very organized about what I was. It kept me so busy, and I was multitasking and getting stuff done. But when that death came in, I did not know my name. And, man, I was wandering around. You know, I'm just like, the rug has been pulled out from up under me. And Butch set me down. And he said, boy, this ain't going to work. He says, we don't even know what we're worried about you. We don't know what's happening here. And he said, what you need to do, Mama started you playing that horn, and you need to go and fulfill your dream and finish, you know, get your degree like you talked about and do what you need to do. Uh-huh. And I'm just like, man, I'll play now. And so I remember going to, I'm looking around where to go, and I knew, you know, through Marvin Stamm, et cetera, that I need to get back to Chicago to get with Bunky. And so I said, I'm looking around for universities, and I see Roosevelt University had a scholarship. So I called up here, and I said, I talked to Eddie Baker, the president of the jazz studies, and I think I talked to Graylin too. And he said, yeah, Mike, well, you know, we've got auditions going on for this fall, but they have to be done by February. Can you come up for an audition? We'd love to have you come. And because I was known in Des Moines for the East stuff and stuff, and he says, I said, no. Uh-huh. Right now, you know, this is what happened, and I can't do it. He says, well, can you send me a tape? Send me a tape of something if you want to be considered. And I said, yeah, well, I got a few things I can do that. So I sent a tape because I was working with a group called the Sand Flute stuff down in Des Moines, and I was playing at Riffs, and Phyllis and Lois, and they would come out, and, you know, I maximized my ability in Des Moines. So I just sent him a tape, and I got a full-ride scholarship to Roosevelt University. This was number the Lord. Come there in that fall, except I paid $2,000 outside of, you know, because I had out-of-state costs. But the room and board, I was staying at Herman Crown Center, 435 on Wabash. And so I got my 73 Buick LeSabre called the Hoopty that I bought from Boo's dad. Richard Dad paid $100 on a payment plan. And I paid that thing off. Who gets a payment plan for a $600 car? But he gave me one. $25. We got it done. And man, and that's how I guess it was my horn that brought me here. And that's where we started to really be able to build a mother-son relationship again. And I remember one thing that really stands out to me, I got up a college student at Roosevelt, and I'm doing well now. I'm going to Chicago State, studying between two universities for jazz studies, and I'll go visit my mother. She's working at Goldman Sachs. She's working at Goldman Sachs to assistant vice president or something like that on the 49th floor of the tower. I still remember.
And
all dressed up because I'm about to go down here and try to talk to some secretaries or some something. That thought I was something. And I get down there, and I got there about a half hour early before we supposed to go to lunch or something because I figured I'm okay. You spotted me down the middle of the hallway and hollered, "Damn, mama, baby." And I'm like, "You can't say that."
You were so embarrassed.
Blew my whole cover. Why don't be look. You mama baby now. Ain't nothing happening around here. We laughed about it, but I'll never forget that. It was so funny.
You turned beat rate. Oh, no, mama.
I spent some time getting myself together. I thought I was somebody.
You were mama baby. You were
probably
somebody, you were mama.
I was definitely that. So it's been a wonderful journey. Go back up now. Miss Roman, you said she was connected to Mount Olive Baptist Church. How?
Miss Roman's husband was a pastor of Mount Olive before H.I. Fields.
Wow.
So she was the first lady.
She was the first lady. Okay.
She was Mount Olive's first lady. And, of course, Carmel and Teague were members of Mount Olive. And
right.
So, and they were all in the same generation. They all, you know, that they were all the same contemporaries as far as age and stuff was concerned. So she knew Carmel and Teague real well, and she told me, said, "You go call Carmel on the phone. Go down there at that pay phone and call Carmel." Because I had the baby. I'm in the kitchen with you in a little carrier. I didn't leave you with nobody. And when I come back from the hospital, everywhere I went, you went to the bathroom with me and everywhere. Because I thought they were going to snatch you while I was gone. And I had you, she in the kitchen. I'm down there in the kitchen with you in this carrier. You know, them little carriers like they carry babies in, but they didn't have no straps and all that in them then. I wonder I didn't drop you out of there, you know. Because I'm swinging you along. You know, I'm a kid. You know what I'm doing. And she said, "You go call Carmel." And because when I came back with you, she was like, "Girl, you are Crystal's daughter." I thought, "Yes, ma'am. I told you they wouldn't take my baby." And, you know, my mother was known all over the world, all over the South Side for being tough and whatever, you know. And she said, "Lord, you are Crystal's daughter." I said, "Yes, ma'am. I told you they wasn't going to get my baby." And she said, "Well, you're going to have to do something because they're going to call the authorities. And DHS going to say that you're, you know, too young to be a fit mother. You go down there and call Carmel on that phone." Had she not given me that change to go call Carmel, the whole thing would have been different. But God had that thing orchestrated. And I'll never forget, I stood between them. She told me, "Get that baby." Because I wanted to stay in the basement with her till the cab came because I felt safe with her, you know. "No, you get out of here. Go stand between them two doors so you can see that cab when it comes. And I'll call down there. I'll see you later," or something she said. I'll never forget. And so I grabbed you and that one little carrier. I don't know why you didn't fall out of that carrier because, you know, I'm swinging you along, you know. And the suitcase, and I saw the number. Because you didn't fall out. God had to hit me in there because I was just, I'm swinging you. You swinging back and forth. I'm swinging. And then I'm standing between the two doors. And so it's like a high school. You can see it's got glass, you know. And I saw, here come the nuns to come get me out of that hallway. And I went out there and stood by that street. And when they come out the door, because it was about a half a block to get to the street, it was way back. The school sits way back. So by the time they get to where I'm at, I'm in the cab. Boom, we gone. And that's, I had to escape with you because they were going to take you away from me, and I wasn't going to have it. Nope. And my mantra was, "I'm not leaving my baby with these nuns." That was what, nope. Nope, nope. And the nuns hadn't done nothing to me, but I don't know these people. Why would I give these people my baby? I ain't doing that. Not realizing that was the agreement that Papa made with them when they put me in there. You know, I'm a kid. I don't know all the details. All I know is I'm not leaving my baby with these strange people. I'm not doing it.
Right, right. Yeah, that's amazing. My wife's online here. I want her to, she has some comments.
You there, dear? Marie?
She probably done moved her phone.
Hi, yeah, I'm here. Yeah, just listening to the story, this is very, I just, you know, put tears in my eyes. I just, all I can say, Mama, you've been a fighter since day one. That's just in you. 15 years old, you've just been a fighter, and that's followed you throughout your life. So that's wonderful to hear the story.
I have the spirit of my mother, darling. My mother was a fighter. You know, Crystal Peavy, you didn't mess with Crystal Peavy, that you did not. And I'm her firstborn daughter. I'm not a firstborn child, but I'm the oldest daughter. And I'm more like her than anybody. And I have to watch myself because that Crystal will take over in a minute. I tell people, allow me to stay shepherdess. You don't want Suzanne or Crystal to show up. Let me stay shepherdess, you know. But I'm like my mother. Mm-hmm. My mother was highly intelligent, highly intelligent. You couldn't fool her. She had a high IQ. And she was very astute, and she could sense when something wasn't right, you know. And I knew somehow I didn't, as a 15-year-old girl when he was born, I didn't know why it was wrong for me to leave him with these people, but I knew that was not what, it wasn't right. And then later, now I'll tell y'all this, later on I've been told, and I don't know how true this is, let me say it very clearly, so that nobody, I can't say I know this for a fact. But I have been told that those babies at Booth had been sold to different people. Now, I don't know if that's true or false, but that wasn't going to happen to my baby. That's all I had to know. They wouldn't give my baby to nobody, and then I don't know where my baby is the rest of her life. I ain't doing that. We don't do that in our family. We don't do that. So,
yeah. I think I met her once, right, Michael? Did I meet her one time?
Who's that?
So your grandmother.
But you did come with me to her homegoing service.
The very first time I came down there.
Y'all hold on a minute. I got to answer this phone. Somebody's at my door. I'll be right back.
Okay. Yeah, no, she was no, in, Michael, in her demise.
Excuse me. The very first time I came down there, we went to her house. Yes.
Can I help you?
Maybe so. Okay. I can't remember.
No, you
can. Yeah, the 20 years. So that, you know, that's possible.
Yeah, the very first time. Your mother was in the front seat, and me and Nicole was in the back. Yep.
Is that when she gave me the bear? A crystal bear. Were you there? I can't remember.
No,
that's the last years I heard.
That's when we all went to the mall to get my looking for a ring for me.
Oh, you man. Okay, I don't know. you don't really what's somewhere now. Wow.
Because
I know she was in the last few years. I remember her. She was in her demise. And I don't have a good memory of her in that regard because she was always an activist, always very strong. And matter of fact, when we came to her homegoing, my mother would tell you, I told her, I said, Mom, they got somebody wrong. I said, who's that in the casket? She said, that's your grandma. I don't know her. I said, who is this? And she says, Mike, yes, she went fast. And I'm like, wow. And now I see pictures, and I'm just like, yeah, she was. But that's not the grandmother I remember, you know. And so I don't know.
Going to the house, doing to the nursing home was not a good thing for her. And I tried to keep that from happening, but I didn't have the – I wasn't the person to make that decision. But that was not a good thing for her.
So it's possible, Marie, that because based on what you just said, it's possible, go to her house.
Mom, you don't remember? I came down with me, Michael, and Nicole for the very, very, very first time I met you, and we all went to the store to get a ring, went to look for my ring, a wedding ring for me. And that's when we went to the house to meet your mother. I met your mother then. Yeah,
she told me when we went to the mall, Michael. Yes, she did.
Yeah,
yes, she did.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
I remember that because we went to the mall looking for, and we, what's the name of that store? when that, oh, God, it was a real prominent jewelry store. I remember that. And then you did get to meet Mom. That's true. Yes. Yeah, I remember, Marie. That's true.
That's the first time. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, because those last years, I don't, it's very vague in my mind because didn't know. Yeah, I didn't remember. Like I said, when I saw her in the casket, I'm like, who is this? I'm like, they made a mistake. That ain't my grandma.
No, when they put her in the nursing home, she was walking and talking and everything when she went. See, I tried to get my brother Leonard, who was the oldest one, and he had cancer, and he was passing himself, and he put that torch on to Daryl, and I kept trying to tell him, "Pete, let me make the arrangement, because I would have brought Mom home," but he said, "No, Daryl, you know, Daryl had to do it." And Daryl put her in the nursing home because he said it was only 10 minutes from his house. But they really, it was terrible what they did. They put her in, because Mom was so strong-willed, as I am, she was going home. It's like I decided I wasn't leaving Michael. She had decided she wasn't staying there. So they had to watch every door, because every door she could get to, she went out. So what they did was put her in a wheelchair, and put an alarm on the wheelchair. So whenever she tried to stand up, it rang. So that took her ability to walk away. And so then when she took her ability to walk away, then her mind began to slip, and she didn't like being out there, so she wouldn't eat. She wouldn't eat. So I'd have to go out there and feed her, or she would spit the food at the people because she didn't like them people. You know, mama's tough. And so I'd have to go out there and feed her. And she'd eat if I was there because I could feed her. But otherwise, she was used to, you know, she liked me. She liked Kentucky Fried Chicken. That's what we, you know, that's what we do. And black coffee, that was her thing, and she couldn't get that there. They had, you know, they called themselves having balanced meals or whatever. Well, she didn't want none of that. None of them green beans that wasn't all the way done, you know, that still had a crunch in them and all that. She didn't want none of that. And so she lost a lot of weight, you know, And, but it was, the nursing home was not a good place for her. And I just hated that she was there. And I, as much as I could go, I went until your younger brother, you know, had to go away. And then he was the one that would drive me. And then I couldn't go. And Lois and Phyllis went to see her, too, out there in Indianola. But it just was not, she didn't want to be there. And when you put someplace, people someplace that don't want to be, especially someplace as highly intelligent as she is, it just really, it devastated her life. That the nursing
home,
yeah, devastated her life.
Takes away her spirit. Yeah.
It broke her spirit, and by the time that she passed, she had lost a whole lot of weight, and well, she just didn't look like herself.
Okay.
Well, there's a picture I put on my Daryl with her and her 92nd birthday, and you can see then that she had lost so much weight and had lost a lot, you know.
Yeah, I can see it up in her neck area and et cetera. I did see, you can see that she was starting to lose her weight at that time. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if she's able to talk or not. I know she had sent me notes and she was doing some other stuff. So Tyra, are you able to speak?
Yeah.
Any comments on the story? Or anything you want to fill in? You've been part of the whole thing too.
I missed a lot. So it sounds like we're going back down memory lane. Not really sure what you want me to fill in. The part about the nursing home, or because that was never supposed to happen. My whole life, Chris has said, don't put her in the nursing home. Don't know how Snoop got involved or Daryl, because they were not the power of attorney. That was my mom's twin sister. So that this whole era, I wasn't there. So I can just talk about what I know. But for the most part, the latter part, like at the end, that's none of my business, y'all.
Okay. Well, what do you remember about your grandmother?
Crystal was a very interesting person.
I know she worked for CBS for years.
She was the first black woman to break the color barrier at Iowa Public Television. apparently when
and
I came
finance.
In.
Dial
yeah,
finance,
who
they had
for
them to dial either.
By the time I came around, I guess the story was that, you know, my mom was incapacitated and she took me from birth at Broad Lounge. And the story was that she used to take me to work with her on Bell Street at Iowa Public Television and I would sit in the carrier. That is I'm fine because there's pictures and her secretary for years, Jan, would always talk about that. So I would hear that story from, you know, back then up until when they moved to Johnston. Going back, I know that she was born in Pershing. Still don't know how or what their ties was to Buxton. They used to do tours to Buxton, so I did see Buxton one time. She was a member of Delta Sigma Theta, as were quite a few of our family members. Yeah. I think there's four. There's four. Not really sure what else you want me to say. there's a lot to say.
To fill in the story. I mean, I understand there's a lot of other stuff that's went on that, you know, that clouds a lot of things that happens with every family, and some crazy stuff always happens in our family as well. But trying to pull out the silver linings of, you know, of how we are, who we are today, and how we've got there in spite of the difficulties.
And you did mention her activism. Yeah, she was a very active member of the Rainbow Push Coalition, which was founded by Jesse Jackson, close personal friends with C.T. Vivian. I actually met Jesse Jackson a couple times in person, somebody's backyard barbecue. I don't really know who that was able to go with her, the little backstory, I guess. When I was younger, I you know, had to go with her everywhere. So this is how I remember these things. We saw Angela Davis. Wherever KUC, whatever that the radio station was, the old building.
KUCB.
Yeah, that used to be a school. And Angela Davis was speaking in the former gymnasium. Actually, speaking of that, KUCB, Crystal had a radio show right before Billy Stone. And the only reason why I know that, I used to like to listen to BJ and the Firefly. I don't know what Crystal's radio show was about, but I had to go there, too. What else did she do? She had the Buxton Club, which they would meet every first Saturday. And
that was her life.
Yeah, this is how I learned how to take notes in dictation. Crystal's favorite song was I'm Coming Up on the Rough Side of the Mountain. I used to remember because Crystal didn't clap on beat, right? So she had a very funny way of keeping time. But I also remember that she played the piano a little bit.
She did.
I always wondered where the music came from in the family. But Crystal did play the piano. My fingers were too short, so I could not play piano. But she would always talk about how my mom and Tanya was in the band. I think she said Phyllis and Lois was in the band, too, or something like that. And then she talked about Mike.
He was in the choir.
Yeah.
He was in the choir.
And then I came along, and I started playing in the orchestra. So I went the other way. I wasn't no band geek. What else? I know that she, I don't know how long her and Scamp was married, like 40-something years?
More like 50-something.
Yeah, something
long
like that.
Time.
Yeah. One thing that she was very proud about, she would always talk about that she only had one drink in her life, and that was a screwdriver. She sipped it, and she didn't like it, and it was at somebody's party. She would always talk about that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then
that kept me from drinking at all. I ain't mm-hmm. never had none because so I ain't never had none.
Yeah. Her favorite coffee was Folgers, but she it wasn't Black and Susan. She took the that coffee mint cream right now.
Oh, and okay.
That A&E orange drink that wasn't orange juice. Chris didn't eat vegetables, right? So mm-hmm. her favorite stuff was processed. So she would drink the A&E orange drink and coffee, no water. Her favorite food was Brunch Swagger and Ritz. And
yep.
Brains and egg.
Brunch Swagger and Ritz.
Brains
right.
and egg. Yeah.
Brains and eggs.
Yeah, brown swagger and ribs.
Brains and eggs for breakfast.
I haven't heard that in a long time. Brown swagger and ribs, yeah.
Yeah, that she ate brown swagger and ribs during the day.
That's
and
my
for
favorite
breakfast,
now.
She ate brains and eggs.
That's my favorite. Now, brown swagger and crackers. Mother and I used to sit around and eat crackers together. For some reason, mm-hmm. we like saltine crackers. I don't know what that was.
Yep.
I think this is why I'm vegan, y'all.
possibly so. I mean,
yeah. I didn't mess with none of that stuff. And Kentucky Fried Chicken on Sunday and Dairy Queen.
Yep. I got some Kentucky Fried Chicken here now.
Lord have mercy.
But, trying to think what else. She was actually some position in Delta Sigma Theta because then people would come to the house on Linden Lane all the time. Or
she used to be the president, Tyra. She used to be the president.
Well, I knew it was something because they would come to the house and then she would drag me over there to them things at the Crystal Tree or whatever.
Uh-huh. For years she was the president.
Uh-huh. And there was something else they would do at the I think it was called the Yonkers Tea Room. But I never knew what she did. I was too little.
Yeah,
she was a president for years.
I know that she had several acquaintances, but like her good friend's name was Lavinia.
Yep, Miss Lavinia. Did your hair.
Miss Lavinia used to comb my hair because nobody else could comb my hair. So Miss Lavinia would comb my hair. And then she met Mary Lincoln.
Mary Lincoln and Barbara Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Babs, remember that?
One thing that Crystal did was she would get her information from Ebony Magazine and think that was the God's honest truth, whatever they were putting there, Ebony and Jet.
Yeah, if they said it was the truth no matter what.
Ebony or Jet. Absolutely right.
Yeah, she would copy the stories. Like, okay. Crystal had very thin. I don't know where the rest of our mouth came from, but she had thin lips, right? But most of us, we got full lips. And
uh-huh.
I think I was around 11 or 12 at this time, and she had copied this thing, this article, and stapled it and brought it back. This one, she stayed over there at the first apartment on Westchester Village. And she
uh-huh.
was like, so excited to show me this article. I'm like, lips are in. And I'm like, what are you giving me this for? Right? Like, I already know that. And back to that apartment, her favorite secular song was Shotgun. And I don't know who sang that song, but she would always put it on the record player. And Crystal couldn't dance.
That's the only time I would see her
try to dance.
Shotgun. Yeah,
Shotgun.
I know about that.
Shotgun. That song.
Yeah, that's
the
one.
That song.
That's
her favorite secular song. And she would try to show me these old fogey dances and stuff. I wasn't trying to hear. It was so embarrassing. But, yeah, that's the only time I saw her dance.
That had to be fun.
that really had to be fun.
So don't that remind you of how King feels when you go to dance with Satyra?
I guess so, but see, I was a professional dancer, so that's different.
Not to him. He's just as embarrassed as you was when you looking at mom.
That was bad off of me. But I do remember that her favorite color was black, and she was the first person I ever saw that had black lipstick or black nail polish. And actually, I wear that now still. And she was always real proud. I guess you could say she's like a pack rat because she kept a lot of stuff, y'all. She kept letters from between Tig and Carmel, some other people, like one of her cousins. And but she always liked to go visit family members, right? Mind you, I'm little. I'm getting dragged around. Like, I didn't know that Mike was Aunt Susie's son until I was up in age. I didn't know that. But we would always go to Chicago.
We were raised his brother. We and Daryl hung out every Saturday, going to the movies or something. Scamp would come get us and take us. We raised his brothers.
I didn't know that. That was way before my time. Because what I remember is, like, when you was leaving, Mike, but I told you that whole story was at the Drake Relays Parade. Crystal had that Lumina, and you had told us that you was leaving. And I told you about the clown that came and scared me, and you had me on your shoulders. I remember that. You had on that black shirt.
You know, that was a funny comment that you bring that. Because I just could not. My grandmother was not having it. She says, "Where are you going?" I'm going to Chicago. You know, we go there every year. I'm just going 6 hours east. She says, "We don't leave the nest." You and me, Satyra, most of our family is still in Des Moines taking care of the nest. As a matter of fact, Mom moved back home to take care of the nest.
We don't leave the nest.
She always would keep things from Mike. That's how I found out Mike was in the band. Until we went there for the wedding and stuff. I didn't know nothing about that. But she would always keep those clippings. Everybody really knew when he played in NFL. She had all that stuff. Something about Mom and Tanya and Phyllis and Lois did something, and something about Circus. I used to go through and look through those scrapbooks. She scrapbooked, that's what it was called. So I wouldn't have nothing to do but be in that room and just look at all that stuff. So I guess it's how I know all this stuff, right?
I'd love to see, because we used to, you know, you had to peel that paper back and put that stuff in there and peel it over. I ain't seen a photo album like that in years. I would love to go through them.
Yeah. She had that was like eight of those.
Nobody knows.
The Bible I'll tell you about, Aunt Susie. And then she would always, you know, go to, I never knew why we was always going to Chicago, but now I know that those people were her cousins. And I guess he was very family oriented, right? Because we went to Kansas City to see somebody. As soon as you told me who it was, I can't remember. Dot and Dot or something. I don't know those people. And then, and then to Sacramento to see Papa and Mother Lane, and to Omaha when her daddy was dying and Mother Carey. Mind you, I'm 2 and 3 years old, right? But I remember all this stuff. And then always to New Orleans to go see Snoop. So not leaving the nest, that I think that that's why she would do that, is to try to keep those connections.
The family to stay together.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of people really don't they talk about her activism, but they don't know that. Like, when I was talking to somebody down here, I was telling them, I was like, my grandma was personal friends with Jesse Jackson. I've seen that man, I don't know how many times. And one funny story, when they stayed on 1339 Minute Lane, I think this was before I was born. It had to be, but the story was my uncle was roommates with Bruce Jenner in college.
They went to high school. Luke and Bruce Jenner. Listen to me. Bruce Jenner went to North High School in Des Moines.
I didn't know that.
Yep, they were high school friends, and then
he went
to college. They were roommates at college, but Bruce Jenner went to North High School here in Des Moines.
I had no idea about that. And then the big story was that how when Michael Jackson came to the house with the Jehovah's Witness.
Yep, that happened too.
So it's a lot of
Michael Jackson comes to the house.
No, all this was before me.
No, that was before she was born. But see, you have to understand, mother
told me an autograph. You should have got an autograph for me.
She wasn't born. But mother was the president of Delta's, and at that time, Delta was the biggest thing going in Iowa. And so, like when Wilma Rudolph Ward came and ran for Drake Relay, she stayed in mom's house. That's where she stayed.
That was the other story.
She stayed at 1339 Linden Lane and went over there and ran on the Oval, but she stayed at 1339 Linden Lane. All the big celebrities came to that house because mother was a president of Delta. And so, you know, that's all them people. Michael
now,
Miller,
before that thing fell on that third room or that second room.
Oh, that was way before the tree fell. Way before the.
Wow.
Yeah, I came after all this stuff.
Very good.
Yeah,
we got somebody else on. Is that Tito? Is that you? One 118-4419. Can you hear me?
Whoever it is, it probably needs to unmute.
Come off and come back on. Okay, can you hear me? You can take your phone off mute and you can speak. Okay, well, we're glad to have you this morning. I can't hear anything. But we've just been having a good time in regards to the message that is we've been dealing with. And the subject matter in regards to my life story through the eyes of my mother, and then to be able to see on my grandmother through the eyes of my cousin, Satira, who was raised with her. So we come through a family line where everyone kind of became surrogate parents of the next generation or whatever else, kind of passed them on. And the blessing of that is now information that you know some of us didn't know has been still left in the hands and the hearts of some of us that in spite of even some of the things that have happened, we still can try to document that stuff and pass it on to our kids and their children. Will have something to go back and look at. Like this show will be good for that as well.
And Michael?
Yeah.
Michael?
Yes, ma'am.
And that premise in our family of somebody taking the child, that still goes on because now Nietzsche has adopted one of Damien's daughters.
That's right.
Yeah, it goes on. That's what we do in this family. As much as we can, we try to keep our children within the family unit. We try to make sure. Now, it hasn't always worked, but we do the best we can to keep them close to us, you know.
Yeah. So important. Whoever that caller was, they could not seem to get in, so they dropped it. Think they're going to try to get back in. What it evolved is now, you know, even through all of this web of life happens and, you know, has an uncanny way of getting our instruction and our attentions and et cetera, it's been a blessing. Okay, hold on. There he is now. got their hand up. Let's see who it is. Let's see if I can get. Okay, I see your hand up. Are you able to? You able to talk now? Take your phone off mute or 1-1-8-4-4-1-9. I see you. You have the floor. Not getting any kind of audio from you at all. So when your audio can come in, or if you can figure it out, then we'll accept your timing at that point in time. But to go back to what we were talking about, it's just a blessing to be able to see how God has worked things out over the years, over the generations, over the decades. I'm approaching within the next couple of years, it'll be 60, you know, it'll be six decades, but or three score, as you would see. But to see how God still works and to where we're at today and being able to share information and be able to it's just a joy to be able to share ministry thoughts and information and to learn, to be able to sit at your feet, Mother, and learn some things that, you know, we weren't able to do, I would say, 5 years ago. You know, we wouldn't have been able to do this six years ago.
No, we wouldn't have been able to do this, no.
You know, it's really been a joy because, especially when you're talking about community service and getting out into the community, you have an organization, Armed and Dangerous Ministries, along with Four Hour Hungry Outreach Ministries and a bunch of other things that you're doing, that has, you know, that we all need to benefit from. And we need to learn from, because you're doing it on a grand scale. You've been called the Mother Teresa there in the Des Moines, Iowa, and that people continue to bring you stuff to be a bridge to get stuff out to people, because they know that you're affecting people. They bring in mattresses and everything else, even when they're not supposed to, you know. So at least the thought is there, even though they still have to follow the rules. I transition into that a little bit to learn more, because my wife has a heart for that as well. We're trying to do it on a small scale here, and we'll eventually one day, if the Lord says the same, he'll grow us to something a little bit bigger. But how did you get started in serving people, you know, with food and toys and whatsoever else? And what would you say would be the building blocks that we can learn from? Or we need to give us, you know, some starting points that we need to do and kind of look at the journey. We still have an hour to talk.
Okay. Well, to begin with, you have to. It's not something that you just take upon yourself, because it's a lot of work. You have to be able to work with people, and you and Marie will be able to do this because you all kind of know how to talk to people and work with people. Which was better than I could. When I started doing it, I had to have Mother Evelyn Davis, who was another one of our trailblazers in Des Moines, help me, because folks got on my nerves. You know, I'm Crystal's daughter, you know, and people got on my nerves. But Mother Davis would always help me. And it really started out, it wasn't something that I planned, you know. It was not what, I was a member of Elder Day's Church, the same person that sold you the $600 car. I was a member of Carter Memorial, Bishop Carter, and then I went to Elder Day's, and I worked with Elder Day, and I had started him with the Food Bank of Iowa, to set it so that we had food in the community we could give out to the people, and I set it up in his church, and so then I was in charge of giving out that food from New Friendship, because I set that up, and so I really like doing that. And so then when Lord called me to start my own little ministry, and I decided to step out on faith and just go ahead and start it. And that's a whole other thing. If I told you that story, you wouldn't hardly believe it. But anyway, when I did that, I was in a building that used to be a nightclub. The Lord has always put me in non-traditional places. And it was a very well-known nightclub that had been shut down in January. And they had the owner of the thing in handcuffs taking him out of there. And by July, it was Learning of the Lord Bible Study Center. And it had a big parking lot. And I just would go out and stand on the parking lot and say, what can I do on this lot? I mean, you know, because I didn't have that many members. I had a lot of kids more than adults. And so I didn't have a lot of cars that needed the parking lot. So I'm like, what can I do? So then I said, well, why don't we just start putting clothes and food out, you know? So we would put anything that I didn't need, I would put on the lot for people to come and get. And then from that, I didn't have anything to do with this. People would start bringing things that they had to give away and leave it on the lot and take what they needed. It just kind of was organic. And so then pretty soon folks would start knocking on the door talking about, do you have this and do you have that? Like that gentleman that came to the door a few minutes ago, he wanted to know, do we have something, but we haven't put anything out today. I called Mother Davis. I said, Mother Davis, these people are asking me for this and that and this and that and this and that. And she said, well, what you do is you call it a free farmer's market, because Des Moines known for farmer's market downtown. So you tell them they got a free farmer's market. And then you call all of so I would call the people that had produce, like, you know, cabbage and whatever they couldn't sell, would they give it to me. And they would come and bring it, you know, truckloads of stuff. And we'd put it out on the lot. And then people could come and get what they wanted. But it was free. It wasn't like you had to go pay for it. It was free. And so people would ask me, well, can you get watermelon? Well, I didn't know, because I was just taking whatever they gave me. But I would ask them, did you have any watermelon you didn't sell? And if they did, they'd give it to me. And I'll never forget one lady come and said I like strawberries. And there's no strawberries. She was adamant, I don't have any strawberries. So I just asked the man, I said, do you all ever have strawberries? Because, you know, strawberries don't keep like some of the other produce, like apples and oranges and stuff. And he gave me some strawberries. And that lady was so happy she cried because she had these free strawberries. And so we did that until the flood of 93. We had a big flood here in 1993 and almost closed the city down. And so then I was connected with, was friends with the people at Bethel Mission at that time. And so what Ralph Huff did is he said, because I had all this big room on my lot and Bethel Mission didn't have that big of a parking lot, so he sent all the trucks to me. So they was unloading army rations. We had cans of, you know, food that the army people, you know, they had at the red, where you had to open it up with a can opener, and it was cake and pie and dinners and all that kind of stuff. I had semi trucks full of Gatorade. I had mattresses and box springs and what have you, all kind of linens and Mercy Hospital gave me all kind of sheets and we had cleaning supplies, you know, and then the Army Corps of Engineers would bring bottled water. And I'd have all this bottled water to give away and all this Gatorade to give away and all this stuff. And people would line up 3 and 4 blocks long in order to do this, you know, which reminded me of when I used to give out food in Chicago from my house. And we'd have 3 and 4blocks long. So God just did this. I mean, you know, it was organic. I didn't do it. And so when after the flood cleared up and they got, because down there by North High School, they flooded it, all that flooded out. North High School was flooded out, all everything down there flooded out. And I just happened to be over on this side to get the flood, but we didn't have any fresh water. And so they brought just water. People would come to me to get gallons of water because they didn't have any fresh water, because you couldn't use the water from the tap. Because it had been contaminated from the flood. So we couldn't turn in our tap and drink water. So they brought all this water to me and all this Gatorade, and they would send anything that they were going to give to Bethel Mission to give out. Ralph Huff sent it to me. So like I said, I had semi-trucks full of stuff. And the biggest thing was them Army rations. And I didn't know that that's how the Army rations went, but it was in a... They were in big tins, but they was like sardines, like you open up sardines, and in there there would be cakes and pies and meals, mashed potatoes and gravy and chicken and da-da-da-da-da, and we had all that to give out to the people. So when that happened, then, of course, this became the place where people looked to get stuff, because that was where they got their supplies and then cleaning supplies. I don't know how many bucks and mops and Pine Sol and bleach and all that kind of stuff that I had, because it came in semi-truckloads. And so the whole city, not just the inner city, but the whole city would come there and get stuff. It was almost like being at the Red Cross, you know, because the Red Cross had stuff over there and I had stuff in my place. And this went on, this went on with these trucks, semi-trucks, for months, maybe 6-7 months, maybe a year. And people would come and line up. I'd tell them, such and such a truck is coming today. And they'd line up, and here we go. I'd give cases of Gatorade, cases of Pop, cases of this, cases of that, all these army rations, all this stuff. And then I got so they would, the people would give me ice cream, and I'd have to get rid of this ice cream before it melted. And I mean, it's just, the Lord has always, he told me one time that I'm going to be, he's going to give seed to the sower. I'm the sower. He gives me the seed, and I'm to send it to the community. And so that's how it really got. And then we had KUCB. So I was the gospel director of KUCB. I had 24-hour gospel going. And so I would have me and all the people that were under me, all the preachers and stuff that I had during my time, Billy Young and Reverend Reesby and Lenore Jackson and Kellen Kingsboy and all them that did gospel, I would tell them to advertise what day I was going to have these trucks coming in. And so then all the community would know that the trucks were coming, and I could get rid of that stuff, because otherwise it would go bad because I'd have too much of it, you know, or I'd have to store it. You was in my little place on Sixth Avenue. Where would I store the semi-truck load of Gatorade? You know, there was no place in there. No, there was no room. So we would advertise it, and people would come from all over the city. I mean, all over this, anywhere, all down in the bottoms, and anywhere that people had needed stuff, they would come there. And so that's how I got to be known as a Mother Teresa of the city, because they, you know, they would come and get this stuff, and it just never stopped coming. It just always comes. It never stops coming. But it all starts out with having a heart for people like Marie has. You have to have a heart for people. And then you have, but you can't just have a heart for people. You have to ask God to teach you to know who is real and who's not. Because a lot of people would show up that didn't need stuff. And the Lord would tell me, you know, I would tell, this is good. I said, oh, don't you work in such and such a place? Because I knew, you know, we know everybody in the city. So they'd show up and I'd say, don't you work? So, but this ain't for you. This for them people ain't got nothing, you know. Now, you want to make a donation that I can give to them? No, I just thought I could come by. No, you can't just take away from the homeless and the needy. No, you can't, you know. And, of course, that makes people mad at me. Today I got folks mad because I, you know, by me knowing so much, I know when people need something when they don't. And you have to realize that your resources are going to be now for people that need. Now, that don't mean if you got a job you don't need, because a lot of single moms got jobs. But if you sporting, you know, a 2023 Cadillac, I'm not giving you nothing. You know, I'm not, you know. I'm expecting you to leave a donation. You know, you got a sunroof top, I expect you to leave me a donation for these people that don't have that. And so that kind of makes people mad, because people come and try to take advantage, and you have to know. And there's something about me, and I don't know what it is. This part I don't know. But I can tell in my stomach whether you're lying to me or not if you need something. I can feel it. I don't know what that is, but you can tell me the sob story and come. I've had them come crying and snotting, and I just stand there and look at them. And when they get through snotting and crying, I said, well, don't you work for so-and-so and so-and-so? Don't you work for Principal Finance? Aren't you the vice president of such and such and such? And see, then they'd be shocked because they didn't know I knew that. But I'm like my mother. I read a lot. And so when these periodicals and things come out about the business people downtown, I read all that stuff. So you can't show up here talking about you need something and you the president of Principal Finance. I'm like, wait a minute, bro. I need a donation from you. That's what I need from you. I need a few bucks so I can buy somebody some food.
That's right.
But God will, if you are sincerely wanting to help the community. And then this is another thing, Michael. You can't wait till what you think is the perfect time, because tomorrow is not promised to us. So, you know, you're not going to never know everything about it and every little iota and every little thing about it. You're not going to ever do that. if you're going to do something for the community, you just have to start doing it. If you got something to give, just give. Giving it shall be given unto you. Just get started. You know, you don't have to say, because stockpiling stuff ain't going to help you either, because you're going to have a whole bunch of stuff. We got a bunch of stuff now we're going to have to go through, and some of it give away and some of it get rid of because you get too much stuff. But if you keep it flowing, and people are in need every day, and so I just tell people that, and I have had six churches that came out of this church, and all six of them have a community outreach program because they came out under this ministry. And my thing is just get started. And if you get started and you run out of stuff, you know, if you get in your truck and come down here, I got stuff coming out of my ears right now, you know, that I can load you up with, and because I've got stuff for y'all to come whenever you come to get it, Mr. Peavy. I have food for you now. Mm-hmm. Whenever you come through the morning.
I'm trying to orchestrate it. I know we'll be there the first week of August.
Well, good, because I need you to come get this stuff. I need you to come and get it because it's too much. It's too much. And
I want to ask a question. Can y'all hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, baby. Yeah.
You skipped the whole part.
What part did I skip?
When we did Trinity, that was the beginning. We were still at Carter Memorial. You remember?
Oh, when I was that wasn't really the part. That wasn't the thing that started me giving away food. But yeah, I used to work for Trinity, and we ran the kitchen. They still have the feeding program, as a matter of fact. And I was in charge of the kitchen down there, and all my kids had to work supper, and all of them. I made them clean up and carry garbage out and do all kind of stuff. And so that was also a part of it, but that wasn't a part about me giving away stuff in the community. That was just me trying to help out because they didn't have anybody. The only reason I got that because they told the other day that they didn't have anybody. Whoever was doing the kitchen had quit, and they didn't have anybody. And so he asked me because I had all of y'all, Satira, and they figured out I had an army. I could I could take care of the program because I had an army, and so that's how that happened. But that was
the reason why I brought that up is because that's how we got our start with dealing with homeless people. That was very pivotal for all of us to learn how to deal with those, you know, with the homeless people, that you don't treat them bad. It don't matter what they smell like, if they're drunk or, you know, you treat everybody.
Y'all got a lot of whoopings for mistreating them people because they didn't know. Yeah. You know, y'all haven't been around them. And if you didn't, they don't smell good. They better not say that, and I hear it. You know, I don't want to be by them. They not let me see that. Because I pulled out the belt. What?
Just imagine.
Who
are
you? These are people. I'm not talking about these people. Yeah, so she's right about that. That did a lot with working with homeless. You're absolutely right, Satira.
What helped us to work with them people on 6th Avenue. Because 6th Avenue was a whole, at another world when we started that. That was a whole nother. Them people, doll babies throwing the stuff at us, and
Nisi never could get it because they'd get mad if they didn't get what they wanted and they'd throw stuff. And Nisi would fight back, and I tell them, don't y'all fight these people back. But Nisi would fight back. She didn't fought many a grown woman down there throwing stuff at her. I had to go get her because she'd be fighting the people back. You know, somebody throw something at her, she'd be ready to fight. And I had to go get her because she wasn't throwing at Nisi because Nisi was not going to be she was not going to be the passive one. She's going to be the activist, and you're going to get your head whooped because she was after you. And she done beat up several grown women that would come down there acting a fool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 6th Avenue was a place, wasn't it, Star?
Yes, it was. Another World, that's what it was called.
Yeah, Another World Lounge, that's what it was.
Mm-hmm. It was Another World.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then
Marie, if you really want,
anything we can tap into?
No, not right now. I'm still listening and learning. I got a lot to learn, so I'm just listening right now.
Okay.
And when you all get ready to get started, then all you have to do is call me and I'll help you because it's work. You know, it's work. You might break your fingernail. You know, you might mess your hair up. You know, don't wear no clothes. You don't want to get dirty because working with people is not an easy thing. But you have to have a heart for people, and you have to remember, as you hear me say on the line all the time, these people have souls. I don't care how they act, they got souls. And so you have to treat them as a soul. Believe me, a lot of times they're not going to treat you as a soul, but you are God's representative to them, and you have to treat them as if they have a soul. And some of them don't even know they have one, and some of them think they've been sold it. They don't know they don't know. But you have to treat them because God expects us to be able to be the catalyst to show his love to people. Even people that are unlovely, we ought to show love to people. And that's one thing I had to get over to my kids, because the kids would be like, Mama, don't let them talk to you like that. Don't really blah, blah, you know. But, yeah, so Tyra laughing because she knows she'd be the main one. But you have to, no matter what, no matter how they act, you have to remember these are people, these are creatures of God. They're not God's children because they have not received Jesus, but they are God's creation. And he loves his creation, and he wants us all to be saved. So you can't go there and misuse it. So, but when Marie gets started, I'll be here to help. I'll be the voice in the background pushing it forward. She has the heart. She just kind of really does.
Thank you. I know you're there. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'll be here, baby. As long as you know it's work, you got to go to it. It's going to be work. Pin your hair up in the back and roll up your sleeves, and we're going to go to work.
All righty.
Well, Mom, so I guess my question would be, when you're talking about food, what would be the first thing we should do to kind of start to put together? I mean, you just go to all these stuff, buy some stuff,
No. No. Because that's going to be too expensive on your menu. What you do is find out every city and every town has a food bank kind of a place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I used to do this in Chicago, of course, when they first started giving commodities out, I don't know how many years ago that was, I got the commodities in my house because I was a member of Bishop Sims Church All Nations, and he didn't want to put them in the church, which is where they were putting them. Because people were breaking in the church to get the cheese and the butter and stuff out of there. So he said we couldn't do it there. So I was the only person in Chicago. That's what I'm telling you. I have an anointing for this. Because I was the only person in Chicago was allowed to bring the cheese and the butter to their house. Everybody else, if you didn't have a sponsor, which was a church or some institution, you couldn't get it. But I got it at my house. And so I'd have long lines. You remember that Satara? Long lines where people would be standing up waiting to get this cheese and butter. And
the peanut butter.
And it came out of my living room. But I was the only person in the whole city of Chicago that was allowed to do that. Nobody else. All the big shot churches and all them, they had to have it in the church. If the preacher said no, they didn't get it. But the Lord gave me favor, and they would bring them semi trucks to the front door on Aberdeen. So God has always provided for me. Whatever he wants me to give out, he gives it to me, you know. And so, but what I would do if I was you all, I would go to researching where is the food bank, you know, because food, and you buy your food from the food bank, it's like 10 cents a pound and all that kind of stuff. So you can afford it. And find out
we have a group called the Greatest Chicago Food Depository. But you have to be within 2 miles where they let you set up. If they have a setup already within 2 miles of where you're at, they won't let you set up anything.
Right.
But you're saying we can go somewhere and purchase food from these places and then start because I want me to have more bulk unit.
Well, most of those places charge like 10 cents a pound, 12 cents a pound, like that, for food. And when I was able to drive and go on, I would take my old beat-up van and go drive out to the food bank. And I would buy whatever they was on this list. You have a list, and you pick what you want off the list, and they would load me. And then they'd always have stuff there that people had donated that they didn't do. Like they'd have socks and underwear, and they didn't deal with that. They dealt with food. So they were glad for me to come because I took all that stuff. They didn't have none of that. Right. They would save it for me, you know. Or if they had a farmer that brought a whole lot of potatoes in, more than what they needed – they keep them for me. And I'd load my car. So I had all the food that I bought and everything else they couldn't get rid of. I would bring it back down to Sixth Avenue and give it out. But that's where you start. You find one of those, their food bank or whatever they call them, a food depository or whatever, and find out how you get hooked up with them as a site. And then your food will not be as expensive. If you go into Aldi's and going on, you're going to spend a lot of money. A lot of money.
Yeah, that's what we have before, putting so that way. But, you know, I mean, if there's another way of doing it smarter than that, then we will have to. We would definitely do that.
Well, yeah,
the caller's back in, 1-1-8-4-4-1-9. Can we hear you? See you on two lines, but I don't have no audio from you.
Oh.
Are you on mute on your end? Because you're unmuted on this end. Well, if you can get in, just jump in and we'll make room for you because you've been trying to get in and back, but we can't seem to get any audio from you. But so glad to have you with us today. And hopefully you're enjoying the conversation, and I would love to have your comments accordingly.
Yes.
Have a question, Mom.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mom.
Okay, babe.
How do you select the locations of where to serve?
Well, I always serve for my church, so that makes it easy for me. But by you all not having a facility, I think I would, Michael's always preaching at different churches, and I think I would use one of those, see if one of those ministries would partner with you to let you be a site, because I just always use wherever I'm at, but I have a building. You all are online ministry, so that's going to be hard for you, and I doubt that you would want to do it from your house because you don't want all them people in your house. So, But I would maybe some of those churches that are, that are really close with Michael, that Michael goes and preaches for them, and they, that you all are real close to.
Mm-hmm.
See if one of them would let you be a site, and then you all transport the stuff in and give it out from there. Because by you not having a building, if you had a building, I'd just say do it from your building. But by you not having a building, but it's always good to have it connected to a church, because what you're trying to do is let people feel the love of God. Because United Way does a lot of food and clothes and stuff too, but they're not concerned about the souls of men. So see, we have a different slant on it. We're doing it because we love God's people. So maybe one of those churches would partner with you guys, and you guys would know better which one you're closer to and who you might work with to do that. And then set it, and then say, well, how can I come once a month or twice a month or whatever they would allow you to come, and then advertise and have your people come there to get the help, and you all would be in partnership. And that makes sense.
It does. It does. Okay.
Uh-huh. That's how.
Huh?
Go ahead, Marie. Go ahead, Marie.
That's what we saw over at the other church that we were at. They had to set up something like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's easier when you have a building. It's kind of difficult. But I thought I heard you all say something about having a storage place or something. Did you say something about that?
Yes.
Yeah, we're not there yet, but we're getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you get that, you might be able to rent a storage facility, have two of them, one that you store your stuff in, the other one, then people come and get stuff from there. Because that has happened, too, that they, I've given stuff right out from there. You know, as long as you have a structure somewhere you can put the food, it doesn't have to particularly be a church. I just like it to be connected to a church because of our slant on trying to let people know about Jesus. But, I mean, you can have a track, you can have a card, or something with the information for the line on that card. Make a business card with the line on the card, and then wherever you give it out from, just make sure that the church line is advertised,
Oh, yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Get a business card and put it on there,
Great part about it.
But
that would be a good partner with some, you know, somebody that has a location, and then we can, you know, we can set up. We can always bring our stuff in, and et cetera. But I think that would go over real well. You can pick the community in which you want to work in. So.
Yeah, and it don't. And since you all are, you really are kind of blessed because you can go mobile, because you know some of these churches are in different locations, and so if you had two or three different, a couple of different churches that had a mind to help the community as well, and just didn't know how to do it, you could partnership with them. Maybe partner with one over here this month and over there next month, and you cover more than one part of the city. You know, it's all depending on who you worked with. You know.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, when y'all get ready to launch, remember, we're going to talk about it. You're going to get a piece of paper. You're going to get a notepad, and Mama going to school you. So
school.
That you can get this thing done. Oh, yeah, she's
okay.
She going to listen to me. She's going to listen to me, too.
Oh, yeah.
Is that Tito?
Yeah, I finally figured this thing out.
All right. Well, guys, we got 32 minutes left. I'm glad to have you in. I see you've been trying to get in for a while.
Yeah, I heard about Mickey and Mouse, Michael. Huh?
Any comments on what you may have heard or what piece you got?
Oh, man, I'm just overwhelmed. Michael Jackson at the house and Wilma Rudolph and... Mama going to Disneyland and Disney World and telling kids to shut up while her son's on TV.
Yeah,
Lord have mercy.
Michael, let me do this. I've told Marie this. Tito, I want you to hear this.
Yes,
we had a robot. Michael, you know where I am. I'm right here next to Creative Vision now, but that used to be just an open place where people could come in and have banquets and stuff, okay? And so the girl that started the church with me, Lenora Jackson, had a revival there one night. And so we came out of there. We was fired up, boy, and the revival was over, and I didn't want to go home. So me with my smart stuff, I got a whole lot of tracks. And tracks are little pieces of little booklet-like things that have the plan of salvation on them that you give out to people. And a lot of sanctified people have those. So I had a whole armload. And I told this story to Marie before. And I went down to KP's, which was across the street from where my church was. I was on 6th Avenue, and one of the big shop nightclubs was across the street. Because remember, 6th Avenue was a strip, you know, anybody with anything going on down there. And so I'm down there, and this was the year that Reverend Parrish had died. And so some of his big shot deacons from the Baptist church were down there drunk. Talking about Reverend Perry crying. I told him, y'all shut up. Don't tell nobody you belong to nobody's church looking like you look. Shut up. You know, and so then people were going to the door of KP's, and I'm passing out the tracks outside to all these folks. And then the man was told him, said, y'all can't come in. It's too full. You can't come in. So, you know, me, I'm Crystal Peeve. You don't tell me what I can't do, right? So I go to the door, knock on the door, bam, bam, bam. I got a big arm full of tracks now. I mean, I'm holding all these big old, like in a box. And I go bam. And so when they open the door, the guy recognized me because, you know, everybody know who Sister Susie was. So he said, I'm going to let you in because he trying to be smart. He thought I'd be scared to be in there because I was, just, as far as they knew, I was just a little sanctified preacher lady. You know, I'm supposed to be scared to come in there. So I go in, and I start at the bar, which is in the front, and I passed out tracks, and folks went to holler, oh, my God, Sister Susie's in here. Oh, God. Oh, God. And I'm passing out tracks and going on, and what you doing in here, girl? You supposed to be on so-and-so's praise team, and you in Corinthians choir, and I'm just a fussing and going on. Go all the way back, and then there's a pool table. I'm back there at the pool table, and I go in there, and I scared the girls to death because some of them pulled off their top. They're back there in their bra now. And I put your clothes on. What's the matter with you? And I'm like, you know, he went in the bathroom and they was all screaming and hollering, oh, God, Sister Susie's here. Oh, no, Sister Susie's in here. And so I covered the whole club, you know, and I thought, okay, I gave out these tracks and now y'all better get straight. I'm not going to tell your pastor, but you better not do this no more. And I'm just a fussing. And yes, ma'am, we won't come no more, mother. We promise, you know, like that. Now, you know they've been lying, but they didn't want me. They didn't want me to tell their pastor they was in there. And so I'm getting ready to leave, and then I hear this music. And there was a door there, but it was so much smoke, it would look black in that room. I thought there was nobody in there. But all this music, so I, you know, me with my ignorant self, I go right on in. Praise the Lord. You know? And boy, folks went to screaming, oh, my God, Sister Susan's in here. Because everybody know I holler, praise the Lord. That's my thing. Blessings and praise the Lord. You hear that? That's what I do. And so they went to hollering, oh, God, Sister Susan's here. And they went to running out the back door. It was so funny. And there was a young girl on the dance. They were dancing in there. And they were, the smoke was, people were smoking, so you couldn't see. It was so smoky. And it was burning my eyes because, you know, I don't smoke and all that was killing me, but I was determined. And I get in there and I see this young girl. This girl couldn't have been no more than 15 or 16. And some old geezer, that boy had, that man had to be 40 or 50 years old, had her around his, when he slow dancing with her and grinding all up on her. It was nasty. And talking all in her ear. And the girl was just like, whatever he was saying to her, she was buying every bit of it because she was just like in la-la land. Like this man loves, you know, you thought they was in love or whatever. And I'm looking at this goomball, and I'm like, not today, devil. And I went right up to her, and I said, praise the Lord, baby. And it looked like it, I was so loud, it shook her, you know, like I shook her out of a trance or something. And I said, your mama know you in here? No, ma'am, no, ma'am. You better hit the back door. Because I didn't know her name, but I recognized her face. I knew the family, you know. I'll call your mama. No, ma'am, no, ma'am. Please don't call my mom. Please, get out the back door. And this boy act like, so he squared off, backs up like he's going to jump me. And I turned around and I said, Negro, jump Froggy if you want to. I'm looking him dead in his face. I said, you're not going to rape this girl tonight, just this one. Well, you meddling in your business. I said, listen, if you that bad, jump Froggy. And everybody was like, ooh, because they didn't think I talk like that, you know. Ooh. And this Negro looked at me, and I'm a big girl, you know. I always been a big girl. And he's kind of a young, kind of a, you know, he was like, he was about the size of Teddy Birkin, Michael. And this boy, okay. You know, and so he wasn't that big, you know, and he told me, I said, jump Froggy, buddy. Jump over here. You go back with one of your limbs. Come on. You not going to rape this girl tonight, not this one. And so, well, that's what I say. You supposed to be church people. What you doing here? You supposed to be church woman. I said, I'm keeping you from raping somebody. And he backed on up, went on about his business because he knew better than jump over there. Because I was about to tear him apart anyway. Y'all would have had to pray for me because I was going to hurt that boy that night. I was. And so the girl that worked with me, Patty Boston, and I had told her there was another guy on the job. He was older, too. And Patty was a beautiful dark-skinned girl, worked downtown with me. And this booger was always after her. And I told her, don't you go out with him. Come to find out, she was sitting back there in the back out, then went out with him. You see how the Lord leads? I didn't know that they was in there. And out the back door she went. Everybody run out the back door. But, see, my church was across the street, so the kids was looking. They could tell me who had run out the back door, you know. And I said, so when I got to work the next day, I jumped on Patty. As I told you, don't go nowhere with that old man. The man don't mean you no good. But I was, yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am. But, I mean, I cleaned out KPs at night. They call it KPs. I cleaned KPs out. You know, and it was a Shriner thing. So they had all them Shriner hats on and that kind of stuff. All them people would be like, well, who is this woman? Now, y'all don't know me. I ain't scared of the devil. I come on the devil's territory. I ain't scared of the devil. He's scared of me. I ain't scared of him. And so we got all them people out of there. And then the last thing I'm going to tell you, then we're going to be done talking. There was a young lady that we found on the corner of Sixth Avenue. Sixth Avenue is where all the prostitutes were. And I used to go pick up the prostitutes' kids and hide them so the state wouldn't take them from them while they were doing their deed, because I know putting them in foster care wasn't going to help nobody. And so I'd take them all down to my church and they'd have to come and get them when they got through doing whatever they were doing. But this young girl was down there, and she had fallen in love with this pimp, and he had brought her to Des Moines. She was from somewhere, you know, like a little white girl, and she was from somewhere like Arizona or someplace, you know. And he then tricked her and got her down there. And I got her and took her up into my church. And she gave me the information to her mother and father. And I called and verified that she really was from, they had been looking for her for months. They didn't know where she was. And we snuck her downtown. Wow. And at that time, Greyhound bus would put you on a bus and send you home. You know, so I had somebody sneak her down there. And she went home on the bus. And when the pimp come back looking for her, he didn't know where. We looking out, we peeping out the door. He down there looking for the girl. The girl gone. Boy, that man was hot. He didn't know it was me, though. He didn't know what it was, but we would get him off the street and we would do all kind of stuff. But That's work, Marie. You want to do some work? I got some for you, baby. Especially in Chicago. Woo! Jesus.
Okay.
Woo!
Mother, we definitely appreciate that. You definitely enlightened us on a lot of stuff today, and it's always good to fill in some of the blanks that, you know, you're still trying to piece and trying to learn stuff about yourself, and so you really helped us today. Since Tito's on with us, we got 22 minutes left. Tito, you got any topics that you want to talk about real quick? You there, Tito?
Might have muted yourself again.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
There he is.
Okay. I'm just amazed of how the stories of your lives, how there, someone might say that you guys had a reason to just give up, and how you allowed, even if you weren't focused on God, but some of you were, to the point where, you know, you live your life with meaning, with purpose. And look where you are now.
Yeah.
And see how God has just brought, you know, pieces, you know, Satara to here, brought Michael, you know, brought Mama Holmes together, and look at the ministry has gone in so many directions that the final chapter still has not been written yet.
Yeah.
And so look how, and now you're impregnating more ministries because of the sacrifices, because of the pains and the sufferings that you guys have gone through. And to think that Michael has given up his horn, and you're talking about total commitment. You know, and that's one thing that you know, that I struggle personally with, because like you said, the flesh wants what it wants, but in order for you to serve God, there are just some things you got to say goodbye to. And a lot of times, you know, we're like Lot's wife. We want to turn back and see what we're missing. In reality, you're missing because you're not looking what's in front of you. And so this story that you guys have been sharing today, if people will just learn to listen and say, hey, you know what? I don't know what God has for me down the road, but if I just stay faithful, if I just stay committed, you know, if I just learn how to surrender, you know, what is it that God can take my life and turn around to be a blessing to others? I mean, to think about it, to be called the mother of Teresa of a whole state. My Lord, how many people have you really touched? How many people have you really blessed? And think about it is how many people really know your name? Not just your works, but know your name. And Paul, I believe Solomon said that the name is more precious.
Yes.
And so, my God, what, you know, sometimes we don't realize what we have until it's gone. And I thank God for this phone call, because, wow, you know, it's one thing to be in the presence of deity. It's another to see being in the presence of the works of deity. And truly, the glory that God has received and has poured out in your lives, even though we can sit back and say, well, you know, I wasn't rich. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I didn't drive the finest clothes. I didn't drive. But how many people have you reached out and have become a blessing to? How many people will know your name even in the midst of their lying on a death pillow, you know, that you were a blessing to them? I mean, the mere fact that you could take someone who smells bad, doesn't look, you know, who's homeless, and then give them something to physically eat, and then turn around and give them a spiritual meal. You know, sometimes you ain't got to tell nobody that you love them in order to demonstrate love.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so I am humbled. I am an honor. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. You know, what is honor? You know, when we say honor thy mother and thy father, honor the mere fact to just listen to the story, what an honor it is to hear it, but then what an honor to know you, to know this message. And the scary thing is, I believe that the best has yet to come. You know, You have Michael Peavy, who, I mean, the heart is hard as pure as gold. Matter of fact, get with Demetrius Gilbert for your food. He can help you with that with their food bank. Marie, you know, who is a walking ministry. You know, because one thing I don't like people that hide behind scriptures. But I sure do love people that live scripture. and there's a big difference. There is a big, and Mama Holmes, I just can't tell you how much of a blessing that you have become to my life. I'm just sitting down there just trying to write down some of your wisdoms, you know, some of the things that you, and even though I know what's on paper, ain't gonna help me, you know that heart that you have, and the ability to be a straight shooter. You know, you ain't saying it to hurt nobody. You're saying because the truth needs to be told. You know, and what you do with it, that's on you. But understand that when you come to the well of truth, that's what you're gonna get. and so I applaud you. I praise you for it. I admire you for it. And
you went dead.
Uh-huh.
Can't hear you, Tito.
Hello?
There you go. Now we got you back.
Okay. So, you know, you don't see too many people that are straight shooters that will just tell you like it is. And you have truly blessed my life, and I thank you for it. I thank God for it, because I can see now that, you know, that there is a reason to continue to grow in the grace of God. There is a reason to continue to grow in the Word of God. Do not be complacent where you are. You know, the final chapter has not been written in our lives, and we got to keep growing, and we got to remember that we are in the blessing business.
Uh-huh.
The gift that you have is not designed for you to keep. It's designed for you to give. And man, I appreciate it. I've been listening and laughing and even tearing up and like, wow, you know, how can somebody want to take a 15-year-old baby from them and talk about selling it, you know? No. For you to you had to have that gumption, you know, that determination. No, you're not doing this. I mean,
not my
Lord have mercy.
I don't know whether they sold them or not. That's what people said, but they wasn't selling mine. That was for sure.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
All right, Mac, I'm going to give it back to you.
All right, bro. We have, you know, what I'm learning you know, as God allows me to take a new breath and continue to evolve, is, you know, you have to be conscious of the time you have with people. And it just don't make sense to argue your way through life and waste away time when everyone is connected and can do something to benefit you, you know, in
yes.
one way, shape, or another. I went yesterday, no, day before yesterday, I had to go and get my phone looked at. And the guy that initially had it, he was out sick. So I walked in, and there was a guy that was there that ended up having to do it. And, of course, he had an alternative lifestyle. But he saw my cross that my mother had. And so he automatically just, you know, you can see that there was a standoffishness about it. And I'm like, listen, I think, you know, we talked about it. I'm not here for none of that other stuff. I'm here for your professionalism because I need your help in this situation, you know, what's
yeah.
going on here. And so he had a watch that was, you know, that was doing all kinds of stuff. And I was just amazed at that because I'm like, man, back when, you know, when I grew up, that was Inspector Gadget. Now Inspector Gadget is here. You know, we laughed about that quite a bit. And it kind of broke down that barrier so that he could professionally do what he needed to do to help me. You know, and I'm a paying customer, but Doc, I don't need you being reserved and I can't get the best service I need. I need this white glove service to try to get this thing up and running. And, you know, and so once we got through that, it was interesting. And it's funny because he was talking to other people and he'd go over there and he'd be cussing with them, whatever else, and he'd come back. But we have to recognize that our interaction with people is so important, you know. And that we all have something in common and we all have something we can learn from one another, you know, and that without crossing the barriers of what, you know, what God says we don't deal with whatsoever else. But I'm just so thankful that my mother and I, and Satire as well, have gotten over some things, over the years, and we've let some things kind of mitigate themselves. So that we can come together and work, and I'm learning a whole lot. I'm looking to learn a whole lot more. I've always known I've come from a great family. I know I've always known there's a lot of deep history, especially the Buxton stuff. Satira knows that she was there living it, and I was in Chicago blowing my horn, so I didn't know much about it. And so there is historical records and books and stuff that are out. Buxton is no longer around, but the city of Albia is there, but the history is still out there. And so just trying to learn more about our history. I look forward to coming back home and going to our burial site down at Woodlawn and La Vella. Just things of that nature, you know, which is still a segregated cemetery where you have whites on one side down the hill, and then down the hill where we're at is where the blacks are at. And that was one of the few segregated cemeteries that was still allowing blacks to be to bury their dead there. And so there's a lot of history there. I've talked about it with my mother and back and forth, and I don't know what my wife's decision will be for me when that time comes. I'm not looking to go anywhere soon, but I'm hoping that if that be the case, that I can be buried with my people. But, you know, that would be a choice that my wife would have to make for me after that time. But it's just, you know, there's things that are real significant that we need to remember. It's so important. And so this story is very important. My mother didn't find out that she was going to be doing this until last Monday sometime off Facebook. You know? it was a blessing because she's always been ready to tell the story and to talk about the story. And I'm just glad we were able to record it and able to get it out. To give it to a generation of folks that come beyond us, you know, Buddy and Larry and their kids, they know nothing about none of this. They've gone down there, you know, but they know nothing about none of this, none of the history. And at some point in time, they'll have kids. And so it'll be a record that'll be left for our generations to come, along with the videos we had, you know, the PowerPoint we did and stuff we did on Zoom a few years ago before Carmel passed away. And so just trying to keep that stuff in line. But it's a blessing because, man, if you think about how things started, it started with the patriarchal dispensation. It had to be information had to be passed down through the patriarchs in order for it to get to the next generation. And then, you know, we got, granted, we got to the Mosaic generation, and now we're into dispensation. Now we're into the Christian dispensation. But sometimes we become so technologically advanced that we forget that we need to record some things because we need to memorialize, we need the history, and we need the real story told, not a story that somebody else told. And so this way, you know, I wish I would have had time and maybe had the mindset back in the day to do this with my grandmother, to do this with my uncle, you know, and even do that with my brother Butch. And man, if I could have got my mom thing, it would have been good too. But that wasn't where I was at back then, and God has reasons for things though it is. But I'm just so thankful that at this point in time, my mother says she's 72 going on 73, we've been able to put this recording together. Because there's information on this that Tyra and I are going to have to carry on, you know, to the generations to come, and have to make sure that they have it. You know, Tyra's children has it. Their children will have access to, because there'll be a day when they get to be our age, and they'll start to say, okay, well, you know, man, who was our grandparents? Who was our parents? Who was our family? Who are we? You know. Where art thou? And so to be able to go in and have a record of that is so important. So I just thank you. And then to have my wife to be a part of this as well, because she's a new mom in my life. And so she's, you know, even though we have our hills and valleys, she hadn't told her story yet, though. I thought she was going to tell you a victory story, Marie.
Come on, Emmanuel.
Yeah, you were so
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We just found out. I was going to wait until we got, I guess, in church, but right now it's appropriate. I got the news. He saw me yesterday, and he said, guess what, guess what? And he was telling me that he is no longer homeless. He's moving to his house on the first of the month. And he thanks all of us here at Gargoff, and he says especially because you took out time to listen and talk. And he said, I know, not by what I'm told, but I know you love me, and I know you love the Lord. Mm-hmm. So let's keep him in prayer. Keep him in prayer because he is excited, and he will be moving in on the first of this next month.
Well, that's beautiful.
We've been praying for him, been talking about him, Marie, been trying to help him whatsoever else. And to have that report uh-huh. at home yesterday, it's just praise God. You just know that God is working in very mysterious ways, and we just thank him for that.
Uh-huh.
It just makes you know that you've done something to help somebody, or, you know, talk to them or been a listening block, and for them to make sure that they let you know how much they appreciate you. That's something for the next person.
That's a good feeling.
Yeah. So definitely want to commend her on that. And, so, Tito, before we cut off, how you doing today? Feeling pretty good?
So far. Doesn't know if it's going to rain or let the sun continue to shine, but God is still good.
Any news on Jerome today?
No, I still have not heard from him.
Okay.
I have texts, I've called, still nothing.
Okay. Just want to stay up on the ones that we've prayed for. And so, Tyra, how are you doing today? You got everything taken care of?
I'm going to plead the fifth on that.
Okay. Well, we can talk later.
It's another day.
What did you
say? I said it's another day.
Okay. Another day, yeah. That's wonderful. Okay, well, we've got 3 minutes left. Want to just thank everyone, all our listeners, who's tuned in. I see Brother Garvin tried to get in for a little bit, and I know he's working on a class, so he probably couldn't stay long, and so... But he did try to get a piece of his in, and people have been trying to get in and out for the longest. I've seen this number jump in. I saw the Bam Bam jump up 1-2 at one time as well. So we're just so thankful that we have this avenue, and we're going to continue to try to let everyone share their story, and because we definitely want to be able to remember the goodness of God and show his appreciation, because, man, the more you tell your story, the more you realize what you've left out, you know, or what you've forgotten, or what, you know, more you remember, because he has done so much for us. We've come a mighty long way. And just like for myself, I mean, a young boy, young husky fat boy from the bottoms, you know, with a dream to be play music and to come through this great family that I was incubated in, and only made possible because my mother made a decision that she put her foot down no matter who it was. She was steadfast, unmovable, and no matter how they tried to trick her, she wasn't going to do that. And to now approach 58 on the 18th of June and recognize that I will be the age that my guardian was when she had when she made the decision to take me at 10 days old. And it's just, man, it just continues to to evolve, and then to find
come
out that
full circle.
Was the first lady at Mount Olive Baptist Church when I came before H.R. Field. I didn't know that I was under, but I didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
So we have 90 seconds, told me. And so ask Tito if he would give us a closing prayer and just thank everyone today. And we love you, and I hope to see you next Saturday at 10 o'clock. Tito, can you close out in prayer, please?
Yes. Yes. Father, we thank you so much for this day. We thank you so much for everyone on the call, for the listeners, Father, and for those who participate in this discussion. We thank you for this story. And Father, we thank you for the lessons that we've learned. And Father, for all those things that they have gone through, the joys, the tears, the sorrow, the disappointments. But Father, look at the outcome. Father, we pray that we will live our lives with purpose, understanding that the story has not yet been written. And Father, we know that you are the ones that will give the glory from these stories. Father, bless each one. It's in the name of Jesus, let us all say, amen.
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 Thank you very much. And 20 seconds. Thank you very much, God. Have a great one. We'll see you tomorrow for service. Have a great day.
Bye.
God bless y'all.